Hi, I'm Will Wheaton. I know, right? You're listening to Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 119. And I'm adorable and a doll. According to Daphne Ashbrook. And I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
You know, she said the same thing about my son.
I'm okay with that. I'm fine with having Mason lumped into my category.
Yeah. I'm just saying, it might not mean what you think it means.
I'm tired.
She might have thought you were a cute little boy.
That means I look young.
Okay. Speaking of young.
Oh, Lord.
How old do you think...
It's a drum.
Zach, the Black Power Ranger. What's his name?
How
old do you think he is?
32?
Keith?
I don't know.
He's 43.
I believe that.
Yeah, I believe that.
Why would you believe that? The guy looks like he's 12 still.
No. I agree. He hasn't changed
much. To me,
he
looked like he's in his 30s.
Yeah. Jesse asked me, she says, how old is this guy? And I'm like, well, he was like 16 when Power Rangers was on, so he's got to be mid-20s by now.
I don't think any of them are 16 when Power Rangers were on.
I'm sure they were all in their 20s or 30s. Well,
he's older.
Obviously, was in his 30s. When
he's older than we are.
Sorry, I'm not that surprised by it. He looked like he was in his 30s, but he didn't look 40. I'll give you that.
Flabbergasted.
Huh. I'll be doing. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about stuff here in a little bit. But
that means Ray Park's got to be 70.
What'd you guys do this weekend? We're going to talk about that, too.
Oh, yeah.
The same thing we do every weekend.
What about this week? You guys do anything cool this week?
I didn't do anything cool. I don't do anything cool during the week. Except for work.
Me neither.
Work.
And working overnight sucks.
Yep. We miss you on the day side or the night side. I could hang around as late as I've been staying because I've been posting internet stuff, especially since we've been doing the double posting.
I'm probably
almost there. Me and before you come
one
in.
One day Robert was when I was coming in.
Oh, is that right?
So anything exciting happened for you during the week?
Nothing. I got an interview done for class. Which means I can now start on the music video for class, which means as soon as the music video is done, I can start on the short film for class. So that's pretty much it. That's where my life is in the next month.
Yeah. Everything else has just been leading up to this weekend, really.
Oh, really, yeah.
Well, yeah.
A lot of prep work.
Yeah.
A lot of research that didn't happen on Oz.
Sean and I sort of worked on t-shirts instead of doing Friday.
We were watching Friday Night Who. And then I went back and stupidly stayed up and caught up.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Because I went home and went to bed. I dropped out. I was like,
By the time we got this everything done, you'd left, and I had the t-shirts, you know, the iron-ons kind of finished. I looked up, and they were on the motorcycle riding back to, you know, they were in the institute dealing with the clock. And I was kind of like, well, I only got another 15, 20 minutes. I might as well. So I went back through all the tweets that our anchors, Chrissy and Brittany, were posting up, and then I would chime in on old ones. Like, yeah, I'm playing catch up. I love the movie. I can't stop watching it.
Yeah.
Just can't.
Well, if I hadn't just seen it this week, I might have gone home and tried to catch it. All right, well, let's move right on to news, because we got a lot to talk about ourselves here pretty soon. So
we'll have tangents galore later.
Yes, absolutely.
First bit of news, according to TVshowsOnDVD.com, Doctor Who, story number 33, The Moon Base, is going to be released later this year at an SRP of $34.98. And
suggested retail price for anybody that doesn't know what that means.
Yes.
Translation.
People don't know what that means.
Translation. It's an expensive one.
For this new DVD release.
Would you like my reaction?
What?
I felt like I didn't.
Sure,
wasn't
too disc-er.
I wasn't very honest. No, I wasn't surprised about the price.
Oh,
I was surprised about the fact that the moon base is coming out.
Yeah,
of DVD.
We already dropped that bomb.
Yeah, you dropped that bomb on me beforehand, so I didn't get to react. That was my honest reaction.
That was pretty much what he said.
According to this, for this new DVD release, we expect that the soundtracks reused for the audio tracks of the missing episodes in Lost in Time will be animated. We haven't got official word from the BBC on this, so it's kind of with a grain of salt, but TV shows on DVD is a very reliable source. I've never seen them steer anybody wrong.
If Amazon has listed
a pre-order.
It's coming.
Well, so. and it's like we knew Ice Warriors were coming before we knew it was going to be animated.
Who was the guy that they were saying this week that somebody had already had confirmed that he recorded audio commentary for it? So there was already some speculation out there prior to this announcement that it was coming. Just we didn't know it in what form.
Bill Clinton.
So was it Bill?
Bill Clinton. Yeah. Bill's going to record audio commentary for it.
Might as well be. I can't remember who the guy was. I remember who Bill Clinton was, but I don't remember who said it.
You are old.
And while we don't have official words on that, we did have good official words on the Doctor's Revisited DVD release that they're going to do. Did you know about that?
No. So this is
the first four Revisited they're putting out on DVD.
Really?
So I'm assuming the next four will be on DVD. And
now, why are you excited about that? Because you own all of the titles that are coming out.
Yeah, but I don't know the documentary.
It's not the specials. It's not the.
It's just the documentary.
The titles.
Portion.
It's just the documentary.
Oh, that's so cool.
No. Just the 30-minute documentaries.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
No.
Did you read the article?
Yes.
Then you read it wrong.
I must have read a different article because the way I read it was
Explicity says it aired with. Okay. In yesterday's story, we had an update for you about Doctor Who's Revisited 1 through 4, a June 11th release with the first group of BBC America specials profiling each Doctor, plus a story that features them. The folks had supplied us with the packet up jar. Well, that didn't say what I thought it said. Hold on, let me find the other article where it said it aired with these, but the DVD is only the specials.
Oh. Prove me wrong, because I read another article that said that they were attached to the
unless they updated it since I looked at it.
Episodes that featured.
I can't see them doing that from the standpoint that
that would be such a big box set.
I think it's ridiculous.
Not only that, but the fact that they just reissued the Aztecs.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd have to reissue it again.
And I also read that this was just a U.S. thing, that this wasn't a U.K. thing.
That I could almost see. That makes sense to me.
Now it looks like they've updated it since I originally saw the story. And it says... we've confirmed that the four-disc sets meant to celebrate the show's 50th anniversary will include the new BBC America documentary specials about each Doctor, classic stories. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I just say...
They didn't have that information when I saw it.
Because I specifically read
Friday morning, like...
I read it Friday evening or...
7 a.m. in the morning.
Might have even been last night that I came across it. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm excited that the specials are coming out, but I don't want two copies of the disc. You know, okay. I don't want two top copies of each of these.
Yeah,
stories.
I don't either. So, but here's the important question.
I'd rather have the special editions of Tomb of the Cybermen and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the $64,000 question. So this is one box set with the first four.
Yes.
Okay, so what is going to be shown with the Tom Baker special?
Oh, yeah, because they don't list that.
Well,
look at the picture.
We know now, don't we?
Didn't
I see that this week?
I didn't see that.
Maybe I'm thinking...
I saw it on the UK channel announced that they were doing Ark in Space.
Oh, that's what it is. That's what I saw, too.
UK TV is doing it.
Oh, okay. So that's what I was
saying. So we haven't got a BBC... The cover is just their heads.
That's what I saw, that it was Ark in Space. So.
That's just the cut. That's the box art included. So
it's cool box art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glenn doesn't like it.
No. It's not that I don't like it. It's just I'm kind of set in my ways. I mean, you know, my Five Doctors disc bothers me because it's the wrong color.
Yeah.
You know, I like conformity, and this doesn't conform to anything so far. I mean, it kind of has the logo.
Oh, DoctorWhoNews.net has that it's going to be Pyramid Events of Mars.
That's what it was. I did see that. Yes, it was Pyramids. Okay, I remember that.
I haven't seen a BBC America official announcement.
No, I haven't seen
yet.
That official either, but I did see it posted this week.
And the Amazon pre-order does not list what the episodes are. So,
So you know, I think that's cool, especially for people that might be just now getting into Doctor Who and starting their collection. For me, being a completist and I'm, you know, building my collection... As it kind of is, that doesn't appeal to me at all.
It's targeted to new fans
for
classics
shows.
And really, I think another great thing is to have this get into libraries.
Yeah,
what
that's
a
true.
Great way to introduce people. Like, oh, I like Doctor Who. I want to go look into it at my local library before I sink money into it. Oh, I find this 4-disc set that includes 4 different stories with 4 different doctors.
Not to mention it grabbed you with the new logo. I mean, it's, yeah. It's the new style logo.
It's perfect material for a library to get in stock and yeah, for
not,
people to get hooked
on.
I'm
onto not against it. This release. It's just it doesn't appeal to me at all. Yeah. I mean, what upsets me about it is the fact that in order to get the 4 specials, I have to pick up copies of the.
I
would have preferred the way you thought it was earlier, where it was just the specials, or if there was a way for me to just get the specials. But you know, now that they're part of the stories, it doesn't. I'm a little that's being picky and pedantic and weird and anal, but.
See, I was thinking about picking up just the specials until I knew it was all of them. Now I'm not going to because
they've lost
one the higher price points, and I want the special editions with all the bonus features.
I guess if it were the same price point as
what it would be for just the
4 specials, then yeah, it would be worth it. But yeah, if it's going to cost a lot more, I would just rather have this.
Well, it's like the David Tennant Years box set. It's like, oh, cool. I'm going to buy that.
Yeah,
I already got them. So. Exactly. Well, still cool. I agree with you. Cool for libraries. Because we ran into I talked
cool
to
for
several.
Libraries. That's good.
Cool for libraries. Chrissy's
never,
excited.
Never thought of that.
I ran into several people this weekend that kind of just talked about the fact that, well, where we get our Who from, they're very sporadic. And, you know, I met a couple that was having their picture taken at the TARDIS, and they were working their way through Key to Time to start with, just because that's what they had available.
Yeah.
And then they were like, as soon as we get done with that, we're pretty much going to have to go to Netflix because that's all that's out there.
Yeah. Well, at least they found Key to Time because not all of Key to Time is on Netflix anymore, which I think is absolutely ridiculous.
Anyway. So there's that.
Yay. All right. Well, Moonbase and The Doctor's Revisited.
Yeah.
That's exciting stuff. All right. Let's move on.
Some 50th anniversary news, official words from BBC. On 2 different items, one of which is that Christopher Eccleston will not be in the 50th anniversary episode. And it's not like the Daily Mail reported that he was signed on and pulled out at the last minute.
they wanted to generate a
buzz.
Well, they wanted to generate a mythos like the Tom Baker famous, because this really happened
for
with
like
the 5 doctors.
Yeah,
he was signed on, he was ready to do it, and he backed out like the day before they started filming. And so I think that the Daily Mail was trying to kind of generate that same scenario here, and it's simply not true.
This is where if you had the big soundboard, you would turn up the boo hiss knob.
Yeah. But at least Chris did meet with Steven a couple of times to talk about the plans for the 50th anniversary.
Don't throw him any bones.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I'm not throwing. We don't throw Eccleston bones
or
Daily
Mail.
Bones. Well, that.
That much is true.
I think it's more.
If that's what you're saying.
At least Steven had a bigger plan than just one extra doctor in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I commend
Steven
for attempting, and it what was it, a year ago when we were talking about this, and I said that if Christopher Eccleston doesn't come back, that would be the death knell for me and his doctor. I really don't care about him anymore, and I don't care about anything he does from here on out. Because
I disagree.
He's not that great of a doctor. He was a fine doctor. I enjoyed him as the Ninth Doctor. He's not that great of an actor. I didn't care for him in G.I. Joe.
Oh, he was an awesome Destro.
I haven't cared for him in anything I've seen on the big screen.
I didn't like him, but he did a really good job in 28 Days Later.
Yeah, 28. So I hope his.
You're not supposed to like him in 28 Days Later.
I hope his movie career tanks and he regrets the decision that he made, because that's just dumb. It's just dumb.
Somebody has a little anger management issues.
I don't wish him that much ill will.
Yeah, no lie. I mean, I'm disappointed, but I'm not going to. I still love Tom Baker, even though he pulled out of the 5 Doctors last minute, and he did sign and pull out. I mean, that's not fair.
I don't know about Tom's career didn't go anywhere movie-wise either, so.
But you know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about. No, I from the standpoint that I agree with what you're saying. I don't think it's a bone necessarily, but at least he did meet. It wasn't that he dismissed Moffat out of hand and said, I don't even want to talk to you. I'm done with this.
You still throw him a bone.
No, I think if he, that would have been different. If he had said, I am done with Doctor Who, which, don't ever darken my doorstep.
Several years ago, it would have, that's what his reaction would have been from what
I don't
we understood.
I think he still would have, he was kind of portraying things.
He was portraying
way,
things that way.
I think he still would have met with Moffat.
But, you know, it, and maybe Moffat pitched him the idea and he thought, you know, that's more appropriate for your doctor and not my doctor. I don't know what the details of this conversation are. I don't. I'm just.
We won't know. That's straight. We'll never know.
Number one, he weighed how much screen time he would have. And number two, he realizes that David Tennant is the more popular doctor. That's what he did. Yeah. And he knew that he would be overshadowed by David Tennant.
Yeah, I'm not, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. That's probably part of it.
And that's a selfish reason for somebody to not do a project, and that makes me
unfortunately,
mad.
That's what happens when you deal with actors, period.
Well, that's true, and it should, but...
period.
Yeah. That's why I don't like actors that are like that. I don't like actors
But look at how much issues they had with all of the screen time that they had to try to give everyone for five doctors and three doctors.
But they didn't. That's the point. Is that the only one that would have come in and commanded more screen time would have been Tom Baker, and that's what happened. Is I just think that Tom got a big head, and he wasn't going to get. He felt like he didn't want to be overshadowed by the other four guys because he always felt like he was the doctor, and so he pulled out the last minute. I don't agree with that decision, and that makes me mad about Tom. I mean, it didn't at the time. It's a different issue with me with that because that kind of all was happening. Around about the time that I was discovering Who, and I wasn't really into it, and I didn't know that about that until years later. So that's kind of a whole different ball game. But this is all playing out now, and we're learning about it as we go here, and the evidence is pretty clear of what happened here. And unfortunately, in the information age, we find out about these kind of things, and that's unacceptable to me because. I mean, at the very least, and I'm sure that Steven did this, at the very least, he probably asked him, well, would you be willing to do a walk-on cameo or something like that? And at the very least, for such an institution that Doctor Who is on British television and in the UK and how big its fan base is, the very least that Chris could have done was, why don't I come in and do a little five-minute thing and we'll call that good. At the very least, he could have done that. But to walk away from it altogether and say, well, I'm not interested to act with him. I don't care about him anymore. I'll enjoy the 13 episodes he's done, and that's all I care about anymore.
And that's all we're going to get.
Bottom line
which I've resigned myself to that anyways.
Well, no, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Of his career, all I care about is those 13 episodes he did. He can go jump in a river for everything
else. So you're not going to go see Thor 2?
Yeah, see, that makes me mad even more, is the fact that I have to go tolerate the guy in Thor.
I think he's going to be under so much makeup, you'll forget it's him.
Probably. I can't boycott Thor, though, because that's another part of the run-up to the next Avengers movie.
I'm sorry, Glenn, but his career's not going to tank. He's going to have a multi-million-dollar blockbuster on his resume now.
That's the thing. We're never going to be able to watch Heroes with G.I. Joe, and we have something else he was recently in. I've heard that he's struggling to get parts, and I think maybe that's part of the thing that soured him on going back to Doctor Who, is... I think he is still struggling to get parts in America.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know.
Well, aside from, I'm double-checking one movie.
I don't know, it seems like he was...
Aside from Amelia, which was in 2009, he hasn't been in a movie.
I'm thinking Amelia. Amelia must be the other one. So it's Amelia Thor. and...
Because it was G.I. Joe and Amelia in 2009, and then now...
Well, he did that Lennon movie.
Yeah, that's a TV movie on BBC America.
That's what I'm saying. I think he won't suffer for parts in the UK. Probably even big movies.
Maybe
in the
UK. Maybe he's been on Broadway. I don't know.
No, I just don't think he is not.
Well, he's gonna be in a movie coming out called Unfinished Swan, Unfinished Song. Sorry. Unfinished Swan is a video game.
Unfinished Swan is a much more interesting title.
It's a video game. Did you know?
Oh, is it really?
For PlayStation.
Unfinished Swan?
Notice how he got that dig in there?
It's a
video game.
You walk around.
For PlayStation.
It's one of those high concept games that you guys probably don't get on Xbox. No. You walk around and you like.
Shoot if you're not ink. Shooting around first person shooter, well, then it's first person. It's not going to be on Xbox.
But you shoot like ink Wait, blobs eye and concept, discover.
First person shooter.
No, it's a first person. Weird. It's not a shooter.
Oh.
You're throwing globs. It's well, all. It's all.
It's not going to be an Xbox if there's no guns involved.
Yeah, it's all whites, and you're throwing ink blots and discovering different things as you go along. I haven't played it yet. It looks really interesting. It's one of those high concept indie games.
So they went to the
let's
land
quit
of fiction.
Talking, let's quit talking, Christopher Eccleston. I don't like him, and we're done. So,
well, more 50th news.
Thanks, buddy. You can go online and sign that stupid petition.
You know,
here, it's not stupid. I know that you're pushing the thing and you really want it to go. But here's
the
I don't
deal.
Think it's worth it. I don't think it's.
I can't believe that we're still spending this much time talking about it after we spent this much time talking about it last time. He wasn't going to be in something. B. I still think you're being overly harsh.
This.
I agree.
I think you're being overly harsh because
he wasn't going to be in.
This is no different than Tom Baker backing out, and he is still your favorite doctor, and you don't have this much vehemence for Tom. I don't think you're being fair. I think you're being very emotional. And quite honestly, this tells me that you probably care a lot more than you're letting on.
Here's the other
that Chris is not in this because you're getting so wound up
over
it.
Let's get into that, because Tom did 7 years as the doctor.
Yes.
So he gets at least that. That weights a lot over Chris, who said, well, yeah, I'll do 1 year for you to get it off the ground. I mean, it was like Chris all along has done this thing like he was doing them a favor.
Yeah.
And that's probably true. It was his popularity. But that's what I don't like about it. It's that attitude, that mentality that is absolutely ridiculous. And quite frankly,
that's what I don't understand,
though,
is if he's doing them a favor because of his popularity to help float the show.
Well, was he really that popular?
He wasn't that popular to begin with. I mean, he had two
movies.
Maybe
over in the UK,
I think that was. I think it was a bold move. I think it was a good idea. Is that I think he was more recognizable. He had done some television. I'm sure he'd done some stage. I think he was a recognizable figure over there. And because he had done 28 Days Later, suddenly you've got that bridge. Well, he has been in some Hollywood films, so that's automatically a draw right there. Right. No, I think that's how that played out. And he probably gets the recognition for the success of Doctor Who because of his status. But on the flip side of that, he used that whole wall, you know, I'll do it for a season for you as a favor. It's that whole mentality. The difference with Tom is, Tom, I grew up watching all these episodes that were iconic, and yeah, he is my favorite Doctor. Do I like Tom Baker as a person? Probably not so much, because there's a lot of things that I've seen him do interviews, and he's just BS crazy. I mean, he really is, and he'll do. And he's very uppity and stuck up. Now he's not that anymore. He has kind of redeemed himself in my eyes as far as a person, as far as an actor, because he has come back to Doctor Who and he's embraced it. He's doing the audios now, and he's, you know, sort of being an ambassador for the series now, and
kind of like how Shatner went through that.
Exactly.
You're all crazy. Get a life.
Yes.
You know,
and then
not
embrace the fans.
And then
so
kind of began
the
to figure it out.
So that's the difference between Tom and Chris, is because Chris, he's still being an ass right now.
Okay, but he gets... If Shatner can do it, and if Tom Baker can do it, doesn't Chris Eccleston deserve...
No, because Chris only got 13 and he started out as the old high and mighty, whereas Tom did 7 years of Doctor Who. He put in the workload, and he made the series what it is based on longevity and talent and acting at the time. He made what it is because... Now, that's why Tom got a big head, was because of the 7 years. Chris came into it with the big head.
I still think there's time for him to learn to regret this decision.
There is time for him, and if he comes back in 15 or 20 years and redeems himself, then absolutely, he gets my redemption. But right now, he's on the list.
Glenn is very bitter.
I am. I just, that's absolute
BS. For somebody
BS.
Who doesn't care, he's very bitter.
That is absolute BS that somebody would do that to something that I love. That's the problem, is I'm so passionate about the series.
Well, you know what this means. I look at it as extremely good news, because that means that there was a spot in the script for another doctor.
And so maybe we'll get Paul.
Let's get Paul McGann to fill those shoes. Why not?
I don't know. You saw, of course, this is all speculative, and we talked a little bit about this off mic, Keith and I did. But you saw this week that Sylvester said in an interview that none of the 20th century doctors have been approached or asked to be.
I'd heard that, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I still think they're all under
that
lying
contract. Well,
let's just say,
if they're just lying about it, then... but I guess I have now far from got my hopes up for anything else than what we know we're getting, and that's 10, 11, which is great. I'm glad, at the very least, it's a multi-doctor story.
10 and 10, 11.
10 and 11.
Tenant. You're not finishing the word.
10 and 11.
Tenant.
So we're getting Doctors 10 and Doctor 11
we'll
Rose.
See. Real
and
quickly.
I saw the set picture.
Have you guys seen the set pictures?
Yes.
Okay.
The sex set pictures lend to the fact that it probably is 10 proper.
Yes.
And somebody can bring up the whole, well, but he in the deleted scenes, the thing to grow the...
The deleted scenes
they
the deleted
would have
scene.
To
it's
mention that in this because they don't count because they're deleted scenes.
I want to bring up two things about this and then we can move on. The first thing is I saw these pictures. They showed up on Instagram that somebody had posted that, you know, they're out there on this grassy knoll in the middle of nowhere building
it's
this TARDIS.
Somewhere,
And immediately everybody went, oh my God, it's 10's TARDIS. Because it looks different. I mean, it doesn't have the St. John's Ambulance sticker, and it's a different shade of blue, and it's the wrong size.
It is a different
size,
shade of blue.
It's like, okay,
I don't know
so
if it's the wrong size. So I can tell from that distance.
Everybody, you know, boom, 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 boom on this posting, lost their marbles over the fact that it's actually 10's TARDIS. And it's like, it still doesn't mean anything, but okay. It could still be a flashback, for Pete's sake. Just relax. Once again, this goes back to the, you know, keep calm and carry on. We need to really emphasize the keep calm part of this. Relax a little bit.
Why would it be a flashback, though? I don't know.
But I'm just saying it could be. I'm not saying that I believe is. I'm just saying that it could be. Everybody's getting so excited over nothing.
Well, I was going to say, as soon as I saw it, I knew it was a new
The
photo.
Second thing, have you seen the picture of him?
When they're filming new... It's like having Famke Janssen...
Like filming a flashback?
Yeah, it's like having Famke Janssen in The Wolverine. That's new footage, but it's a flashback.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so...
Okay, I got you. I got you.
Right? Why is it he says it and it makes sense to you, and when I say it, you're lost? Don't understand this. Okay, so here's the second thing. Have you seen the other set of pictures that came out of that?
I guess the point I'm trying to make is, it doesn't matter if it's a flashback. It's still 10 and 10's TARDIS. But that doesn't excuse the fact that it wouldn't be 10's TARDIS.
It wouldn't be a multi-doctor episode at that point.
That's
what they're freaking out about.
Everybody's freaking out over, oh, my God. And it's like, nothing's happening.
You saw my post that it could all be pre-credit sequence.
Yeah.
Yes. And then that's all we ever get of it.
It could very easily be, this is the adventure that started here with him and Rose, and then it finishes with, you know.
Some other news of this, you made it sound like, lends to some ideas. And the fact of the foe that's in the story.
Yes, that was the, and that's what I was. I was alluding to is that the foe in this could just be a pre-sequence thing, and there's actually another foe, and that's why they released photos.
Oh, you think that might be?
Maybe they're fighting the okay.
I got you.
They're playing
cool.
The spoiler
game. That'd be
really
cool.
The other thing that came out obviously is that the Zygons are going to be in this.
Why was it done?
My point was since we segued into me here. My point was that the Zygons could simply be just a we're going to do a little quick pre-sequence.
It could be a glorified name drop.
Yeah,
it's not just the name,
and
but it looks like the monster, but it has nothing to do. It'd be a James Bond sequence.
Exactly,
this part of the movie has nothing to do with this part of the movie.
It's like Jaws in... or not Jaws. Blofeld at the beginning of...
Three Eyes Only.
Three Eyes Only.
Yeah.
And so we've got the whole Blofeld scene, and then, but Blofeld isn't
the... He's not in the movie.
It's kind of a dispatch thing. So that would be the whole, whole idea. But finish what
you were
saying.
Or for the Who people, like the Cybermen and Good Man Goes to War.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. They really don't have anything to do with the rest of the story. Okay, so here's the other thing. Have you seen the other set of photos that have come out and leaked from that particular shooting
I've seen
day?
Them all, Sean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
David Tennant on the phone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talking to George.
We don't know that. But the meme is...
No, somebody does know that.
Oh, really?
Because this the Instagram post that were coming up, and, you know, here's a picture of David Tennant. And again, everybody lost their marbles, and all the fangirls went, oh, my God, David Tennant. And then the fanboys chimed in. He's wearing the brown suit. That means it's 10 and not 10.2.
Right.
And blah, blah, blah. It's like, guys, it still doesn't mean anything. And then somebody asked, I wonder what he's saying. And the person who posted the photo had an entire transcript of his conversation that he's telling the girl that he loves her, and then he has to speak to the kid, and then he has to speak to the baby in the bun, because apparently she's pregnant.
Right.
And then he gets back on the phone with George, and she wants to know what he told the kid in the oven, and he said that's for him to tell you when he comes out. Okay, it's a very sweet and endearing scene, don't get me wrong, but I have problems with this. First of all, why are you camped out on this hillside with a freaking radar gun, shotgun mic that can pick that up.
I read that.
That's
and I
creepy.
Thought there's no way you could have heard that.
That's creepy. Secondly, if that is in fact the conversation that went on, that's his.
Yeah,
that's
a private phone call.
That is between him and Georgia. I don't care how fan you are. get off that hill.
Yeah.
You got no business being, if that's your reason for being out there, get off that hill. You have no business in this fandom.
It was somebody making that up.
I sure hope so, because it riled me.
Because like you said, unless they've got some real high tech listening device, that shot is
from so far away.
It is a photo shot. I mean, it's a telephoto shot. It's, so.
I thought about it.
And if they had that good of audio listening, they'd have better camera equipment.
I mean,
would have better photos.
If you've got a telephoto lens and you can watch their mouth, you might be able to make out Georgia, but you wouldn't get the conversation.
Yeah, but then I could also pull up the bad lip reading YouTube videos of movies.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, that doesn't always work.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. You could probably get Georgia out of a conversation, maybe. But you couldn't get that whole conversation.
I thought about, because then, of course, everybody went, oh, that's so sweet, he's so great, blah, blah. And it's like, I thought about striding into those waters and then realized, they're probably 12. I'm just going to let it lie at this point. But, man, it pushed a button. It just, the invasion of privacy, if that's what actually went on. Oh. Bugged me.
But regardless, on the surface, looking at those photos, I think a lot of that evidence that they were putting forward makes a lot of sense. Yes, it still could be Handy in a brown suit. It could be a different TARDIS. It could be a flashback scene.
We won't know until we see
it. But
the fandom should just be happy having the picture of Matt and David with the scripts together.
Yeah. That's
the best photo ever.
The reality of those pictures that were taken on the set is it lends more to the credence that it's going to be proper 10 and Rose.
Indeed.
It really does. But you're right. We won't know until it's...
Set pictures, we thought Jenny had died from seeing set pictures for the Christmas special.
Yeah.
No, we thought we all speculated that Jenny
and I automatically went to the doctor's daughter.
Vastra's Jenny.
Oh, Vastra's Jenny.
Because of the set pictures we saw of them in the veils and all of them shooting the Christmas episode.
Different Jenny. Okay.
Set pictures don't mean anything.
They're not in the veils.
There was something.
No, that's. Yes,
no,
that's
she wore the veil in the.
That's an episode, though. The set pictures you saw. There's an episode coming out.
It was tagged as Snowman.
So she could still die.
That is the speculation, because it's also, there's a funeral in the pictures you're talking about.
She wears a veil all the time anyways.
She does.
So that was the first time we'd seen her with a veil.
Yes, and you're right. They jumped to those conclusions that was going to be the case in Snowman. But they divulged later that those are the one with, what's her name from the Avengers?
Diana Rigg.
Diana Rigg. Those set pictures are actually from that.
Mm.
One that won't be out for two more weeks.
My point is that set pictures aren't always reliable.
No. Although there was one about Rory and Amy's divorce papers that ended up being pretty damn good.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Aside from Joanna Page also being in the 50th, that's all the news.
Who's Joanna Page?
She, another Gavin and Stacey star.
Oh, that show that I don't
watch.
She was Stacey.
Cool. Is that second series ever come on Netflix, or have they ever done that second series yet?
They've done three.
Okay,
I wish it would come to Netflix.
Oh gosh, it was such a good series.
I need to finish it. I watched two episodes, and
is that it? I thought you watched more than that.
And then I went back to Coupling.
Oh yeah,
and still haven't finished that.
You haven't finished Coupling either. That was a good series too.
This was in the beginning stages of me having Netflix, and I was like, oh, look at all this stuff I can watch.
All right, well, let's move on to feedback.
We did get an email from a new writer, Megan, not my sister, but we're going to hold it for next week.
Hi, not Keith's sister, Megan.
Because she talks about the Rings of Akhtakin. I don't care how it's pronounced. That's how I'm calling it now from now on.
Akhtakin wants it.
Akhtakin.
But you've seen it.
I've seen it, but that's not how they pronounce it. Oh. It's not Akhtakin. It's Akhtakin, something like that.
Oh, that's way lame.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I like Akhenhotten better.
I thought it was Akhtin. I mean, there was another syllable in there, but it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't
something like that. But she reviews the episode, and so we're going to hold that
Keith
for next week.
Keith and I have watched, but Sean hasn't, because we are not reviewing it until next week, because we went to Planet Comic Con this week.
And we know we're going to be long-winded this week.
That's right.
So, Megan, we'll save that for next week. Our first one this week is from Chrissy. Her subject line, the one where Daphne Ashbrook retweeted everybody. Dear Vortex Boys, I'll keep this short since I'm sure you've got tons of Planet Comic Con stuff to talk about. Saw a picture of Keith with Daphne Ashbrook and I had to laugh because Daphne was giving Keith this great big hug, and Keith looked like he wasn't sure what to do about it. No, you all look great, and I'm eager to hear of your adventures. That's awesome that Caitlin wants to record her review of the Eccleston era. If it happens to be a side trip, I look forward to hearing her thoughts. Speaking of Christopher Eccleston, I only have to say this about him not being in the 50th anniversary special. I'm not terribly surprised he said no. Just like I was not terribly surprised to hear David Tennant will be in the 50th. Am I disappointed there will be no Ninth Doctor? Yeah, a bit. But I'm not surprised. Still, none of this prevents Paul McGann from showing up in some capacity.
Woo!
So as far as what hasn't been officially confirmed by the BBC, I'm maintaining that there's not a whole lot of truth going on about some of the 50th anniversary rumors. I know. Keep dreaming. Since you aren't reviewing the rings of Akatsuki,
so I don't have to say it.
Tonight, I've only just learned how to spell it. I will hold off on my thoughts until next week.
We still haven't learned how to pronounce it.
But I have many thoughts, don't worry. Instead, I yield the floor to you three or whoever's next in the feedback lineup and wish everyone a pleasant day. Peace out, Chrissy.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Peace out. Chrissy's so gangster.
And that's all the feedback we have this week.
All right, well,
let's get into our review of Akhenaten.
So what should we talk about this week?
Kidding. Oh, I don't know. Your epic hair.
I have epic hair?
Yeah, today you actually have some pretty epic hair.
I do?
Maybe it's because it reminds me of Nathan Fillion.
I didn't do anything with it, did I?
We could sit here silently and type on our individual electronic devices.
Instagramming something, sorry.
What are you Instagramming?
Our shirt.
Oh. Just because I Instagram something, you have to Instagram something on
I'm not Instagramming
We took a break
anything.
For, I was looking we up took to a break see from how recording, you say
so. I was hoping somebody had a pronouncer for it, but they don't, so.
I'll try to get one for next week.
Okay. We can feed it into Google.
I like Akhenaten.
From this day forth, it should be known as Akhenaten, regardless of what the actual.
So, Planet Comic Con, what'd you guys think?
Oh, I'm still marinating.
Yeah, it was okay.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
No, I had a good time. I thought it was a lot of fun. There was a lot to do.
A lot bigger this year.
For people that don't know. Although we've talked about it before, they had to move it to a different venue this year because it has really outgrown its previous location. And that was evident again this year as far as Saturday went. It was tons of people.
It was still sardines.
However, one of the wise things that we did was we worked as volunteers this year. So if you don't know, that gets us into the show for free, which is a huge bonus. But tickets to Comic-Con are not bad.
It was $40 for the entire weekend.
Yeah, it's really one of the more manageable cons. I mean, because some of them are like $60 and $70. Mm-hmm. So for what you get, it's a really great deal. And my kids, I've never had to pay for my kids because kids under 10 are free. So
yeah.
I should say for Caitlin.
Someday you will have to pay for your kids.
Yeah, well, Caitlin will have to
It'll be.
If she goes next year, she's volunteering. Because I saw a lot of little kids with volunteer tags. So that's what we're going to do.
It's not only that, it's the bypassing the line.
That's the best part of it.
Obviously, we're going in early because we've got work to do.
This is the first year I had to be in Kansas City Comic Con as early as we were.
that
was rough, especially when you're trying to get two kids around at 7 o'clock in the morning to get over there and get there in time. Time to check in, but
because we had to be there by 9 at the latest.
No, well, yes, that's right. They wanted us there between 8:30 and 9.
Between 8:30 and 9.
Sean, in true fashion, got there at 9:10.
was it that early? I thought it was like 9:15.
No, it was 9:15.
Oh, well, there you go.
We were done with orientation when I ran into him, and he was still downstairs.
But we went, did orientation, got our assignments, and then went on, I thought the dealer room was really, really well set up this year.
And the
autographs, they had done so much better. And I think I expressed some concern about a month or two ago about how big they'd gotten as far as how many guests they got. And thankfully, they really had a handle.
It didn't feel like it was huge.
They had a handle on the lines. They knew which lines were going to be, need large queues. They had line holders. They had there were signs that said where the end of lines were, so it was very clear where you were going. So they did a fantastic job with that. really hard to choose autographs because there were so many
really high caliber guys.
Yeah, they really brought a lot of big names in there. They had a lot of great dealer. The dealer floor was set up. The artist was great because you had all the artists in one area, and then you had them all around the back, and so that kept people from walking through the dealer areas where you get some of the cluster because people are looking and slowed down. That kept all of those out of that section, which is something you had to struggle with a little bit. And there was a bleed over with the artists in the old venue. And so you had artists that were near the dealers, and you'd always had that one or two rows that was just a mass of people trying to get down. And I always felt bad in the past for those artists because there was a lot of times there were so many people, you know, in front of their table, which you would think it's a good thing to have that much traffic coming by. But a lot of times it was that just starting movement of trying to get down there that I think they got overlooked.
Yeah.
So this year, I think they were spaced out well enough that they weren't getting overlooked. You could walk down through and take your time and look at the artwork and visit with the artists. There was enough room for lines if they managed to get, you know, four or five, because it was never four or five more deep at some of the artist tables.
Yeah.
But there was room to do that.
Obviously, like
some of
the really big
bigger
ones.
Names.
Tony Moore,
Neil Adams.
Yeah,
Neil Adams was a big one. But again, they also strategically placed those so that their lines were not interfering with the rest of the
walkway. You noticed their tables were wider, too. So
yeah.
There was a lot
yeah,
more
they
of
had
a
bigger
berth.
Tables.
There was a wider berth for people to line up in front of tables.
Tony Moore was at the end of the aisle.
Right.
So he didn't have a bigger table. He just had more room for everything else.
And, so I was really pleased with the dealer's room. I see the dealer. It's the exhibition hall is what it really is.
And Blake talked to a lot of the artists because that's what he's really into. And so many of the artists who this was their first year there were so impressed by just how great the con is for the artists.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we have
it's
all
really
these great
con.
Big...
It really
yeah,
is.
We have these great big celebrity guests, but the artists are given great panels to do and so much attention that it's a big draw.
We talked to several of them after panels that I was involved with. Josh...
Adams,
who works on Doctor Who for IDW, and then also Orlando, I'm going to blank on his last name now, who sat in as a kind of makeup prosthetic, building mechanical things for cosplay. He does a lot of this for the studios, but he's also an artist, and spent a lot of time talking with him, and both of them were blown away by how great the con is, how big it was, and how fantastic the people were, and just, you know, nothing but good things to say about it. So I think Kansas City made it for
Orlando Pagan.
Pagan. You think I'd remember Pagan? but both of them were just, you know, I think Kansas City made a good impression. So,
and it seems like Kansas City made a good impression on a lot of the media guests, too.
Will Wheaton
had great words to say. Adam Baldwin had great words to say in his panel. I think Nicholas Brendan did. It seemed George Takei did. So that's just only a few that I heard. So, what surprised you guys most about the con?
Glenn is stunned silent.
What surprised me most?
Yeah,
about
was
the
con? There anything that surprised you?
The fact that Barta Hall was so ill prepared for snacks and food and stuff.
They were better Sunday.
Everywhere I went, I got in line Sunday again, same time, and they ran out of pretzels again.
That's just bad timing on your part.
Dang it!
You're going at lunchtime. That's the problem.
I noticed at lunchtime they had restocked the cooler. At least I mean, we got the last Dr. Pepper and the last water bottle in that main area on Saturday, which is great because my kids don't drink pop or anything else, so they needed the water. So I was glad that we got that. But Barta Hall, and I don't think that was the convention. I don't think that wasn't Planet Comic-Con.
That was Barta Hall.
Barta Hall provides that,
and they have a contract where you can't bring in outside food,
right? Which is annoying. But I think another thing that benefits it is. The International Convention Center is the other one that used to be at. It's called the International Convention Center.
Yes, the one that was at down in the
Overland. That one is near Metcalf, so it's driving distance from restaurants and whatnot. So But it always seemed like a pain to get away from there to get something to eat. Whereas here, I think because there was, you know, some bistros and pizza joints and places like that were like within a mile. So they were definitely within walking distance.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there's probably some people that did that. And that's a lot better that you could just, you know, walk downtown, you know, a few blocks and find some place to eat. Albeit it might be expensive because you're downtown. But so that's a benefit, too. So Bartle Hall still needs to do better and make sure that they get stocked for snacks.
It almost seems like the organizers of Planet Comic Con said, okay, there's going to be this many people, at least.
And they didn't believe them.
Yeah, and they didn't believe them. That's a comic book convention, not this many people. Right, you need this much space.
Exactly.
What about you, Sean? Did anything really surprise you about?
Honestly, the number of people. I knew that it was going to
be. Oh, I know it surprised me.
I knew it was going to be bigger.
Something else.
Than last year's. I had no doubt in my mind about that. And we've commented that, wow, you guys have outgrown this space. And, you know, Chris, we love you, but you need to move somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so Bartle Hall, for those that don't know, I mean, Bartle Hall is cavernous. This is a big building. I mean, it is
huge. With no pillars.
We talked about that, too. And they didn't even have all of it. They just had a section of it for the dealer's room and the panel rooms and whatnot. But even as big and as expanded as that area was, it still was wall-to-wall people on Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of people there. And
that was just on the floors. The panel rooms were pretty full, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was in the crossover.
Yeah.
You know, it was just this teeming mass of people on the skywalk. I mean, and so that really kind of surprised me because when you do it, where we were volunteering and doing some of the, you know, the moderating stuff where you kind of see this portion of the building for a while. And then when you finally break out of that and you're done with that and you go over somewhere else and all of a sudden you realize, wow, there's a lot of people here. So that I think honestly surprised me. I knew it was going to be big. I didn't know it was going to be that big. So
I could tell there was a lot of people. I didn't realize how many there were until I was escorting guests.
Yeah, trying to get from A to B.
Through the crowds, so. And that was rather
Did anybody
difficult.
Just get rude to people and say, excuse me, coming through? Excuse me. I mean, it wasn't really rude, but I mean, I got vocal. I got vocal. I was just like, excuse me, coming through, excuse me. And people moved out of the way. Yeah. They were gracious enough. But you know, I noticed a lot of people that were guest wranglers, that were taking guests, they'd wait. And you could tell that the person they were going with was like, I just found holes and they followed me.
I was just
parting the ways. I was going, excuse me, out of the way, excuse me.
For the most part, I did
I've
what you did.
I've got the guest pass on.
Yeah.
I get to do that.
For the most part, I did what you did, whereas I kind of found a hole and, you know, I'm the blocker, you're the quarterback, let's run.
Yeah, pretty much.
But then there were a couple times when I had to pull out my my Fezzik, everybody move, voice. So.
I think what surprised me the most, and it probably shouldn't because we're in the 50th, is the who response that there was. There were so many cosplayers. We had two different Daleks. One was with the TARDIS that was brought, but one was just a fan brought the TARDIS. There was a cat nurse. There was a weeping angel. There were so many costumes.
Tell me one of you got pictures of the kid.
Which one?
The Weeping Angel.
I didn't see. I didn't see the Weeping Angel or Cat Nurse in person. I only saw pictures of
her. There was. She had to have been all of three, maybe. Completely done up as this Weeping Angel. The wings were bigger than she was. I mean, and she was.
The costume she can grow into.
Yeah, adorable. Like, you just see her, and it's like one of those creepy Precious Moments statues that party's like, oh, I want to hug it. But no. I'm not going to. And people would stop her and say, can I get a photo? And she would stop and do the hands over the eyes. She would pose.
That's true.
And then they would snap the picture. The flash would go off, and then she'd go. And,
oh.
I mean, she'd get the fangs and the claws out. I mean, she was amazing. And I saw her on the way to something else that I had to go do, and I couldn't stop to take a picture. Oh. So if anybody got pictures of the littlest weeping angel, which is totally the title of a book, send it to us. In fact, if you got pictures of anything, if you were at Planet Comic Con and got pictures, please send them to us. Sean will
post them on the website.
Absolutely. I don't care if it's Doctor Who related or not. We just want to get the photos up there, but especially if they're Doctor Who. But you can send them to the feedback.
Feedback at Traveling the Vortex.
Feedback
or Sean at Traveling the Vortex.
Or Sean at Traveling the Vortex. Either way, send us your photos. We'd love to see more of them.
But not only was there cosplayers, I don't know if I was just more attuned and more looking out for it, but there were just so many Who shirts, period.
A billion Fezzes.
A nice variety of shirts, too. I saw a couple people with the Who's shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Keep Calm, Don't Blink. So many different just shirts. And
just recognizable ones. And then there were a lot of ones that it wasn't until I did the double take and realized, oh, that's a Who shirt. And that's one I hadn't seen before.
Oh, I see. I don't think I noticed any that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I saw several that I hadn't seen before. None of them stuck up here. But... yeah, a lot of that. I saw a lot of 11th Doctor. I only saw two tens.
I saw.
I think I saw four or five.
Yeah, I saw really? Four or five. Yeah. There are a lot of 11s.
There are a lot of 11s.
A lot of 11s. A lot of little kid 11s, which were really cute.
Yeah. Handful of nines. No classics. Aside from the Kansas City Time Lord Society, which had all 11 femme doctors.
I want to say I saw somebody else. Well, Moose came down. Who we've talked about
friend
before
the
on the show,
Moose.
From the show Moose, and he dressed as Four, and he brought a friend of his who dressed as Burgundy Four.
And then
there was somebody else that was dressed as Burgundy Four. That wasn't him.
Yeah, there were several Tom Bakers.
Yeah,
you're right. There were I didn't see any classics other than Tom, but you're right. There were several Tom Bakers, or several Fours.
And I don't know if she was a part of KC Time Lords, or I don't think she was. I need to go and look at the pictures. I'm not entirely familiar, but I saw... A woman dressed as Seven, but I don't think she was part of KC Time Lord.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see her.
Because I've seen update pictures of the costumes that they made, mm-hmm. and the umbrella she has was not the umbrella that I saw pictures of.
Huh.
And she was at the Adam Baldwin panel and asked a question.
Tell them We've used the term femme doctor,
the gender bent?
Gender bent.
I heard that earlier in the week, too.
You stole that from somewhere?
I've seen it, like, a lot of people... What's a femme doctor? What's a femme for? We're gender bending the roles. And so Moose also today did a gender bent ace.
Moose did?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
He had the leather jacket and the patches and the whole bit.
That's awesome. I wish I'd have seen that.
He was over there entertaining the crowd with we're waiting to get their picture taken with the TARDIS, which, by the way, it was a big deal last year that we had the TARDIS shell that people could take photos with.
Right.
There was a line for that thing pretty much non-stop, which even we stood in line for that. I mean, us. We were like celebrities, and we had to wait in that line to get our pictures taken with the TARDIS. Up until
and
probably about...
We're not celebrities.
We were.
To be fair, we could have gotten the pictures before. We just didn't think about it.
Yeah, we didn't think about it. But quite honestly, all the way up until about when you guys left at what, 4?
A little before 4.
A little before 4. That was about the time that line finally started to die down. Was about
when everybody
4:30.
Headed to the costume contest, pretty much.
That was when that line finally
died. Well, we were at the end of the line when we took ours. There was only those two guys behind us. There was kind of a lull.
But Moose also brought out his canine, and all the Doctor Who cosplayers pretty much congregated in that area to take pictures and entertain people.
Yeah.
Which was really cool to see.
It was great to have a corner.
Yeah. And you go to these cons, and you're so used to seeing so much of the Star Wars presence, of all the costumes.
Which they did. They still had a huge presence, but... Because they had the
501st
and the R2 builders and the Mandalorians, and all those guys were kind of over in the one corner. They were in the opposite corner from us.
Yeah. But just to see that kind of Who presence and people responding to the Who presence, I think is more encouraging than anything else, is the response. We have all these fans that dressed up, and obviously, but then there were people that weren't dressed up and coming up and taking pictures and not even wearing Who shirts, and oh, look at that. And I even saw someone dressed as Liz Tin.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw her.
Huh. I missed like Liz Tin. Huh. Very cool.
So it was impressive. An impressive display. A little sad that the majority of them were new Who fans.
That's gonna be the nature of
that's what I come to expect.
Cons now. Yeah, I've come to expect. I mean, because even when we were at Gallifrey, there was really almost an outweighing new fan.
It's very much a schism.
Yeah, which is fine. I'm okay with that, no matter how you come to Who. It's always nice to meet those people that recognize the classics or know classic Who.
Well, and it's
carry on conversation.
What's nice is some of them. I'm hoping. I noticed some that were obviously like there was one in particular, a father daughter duo. One, he dresses the 11th Doctor, she dresses the 9th Doctor. But in my mind, he's been a Who fan forever because he is older and has grown up watching Who. I don't want to...
We presume.
We presume. But in those instances where, like Josh Adams says in his panel, he grew up watching the show because of his parents. And when the parents are there with the kids, and the kid isn't...
On his local PBS station.
Yeah. She didn't look... the girl who was dressed as 9 didn't look a whole lot younger than me. And actually, I'm assuming it was her dad, looked a little older than he probably was. But he had a great costume, and I like to think that they're a part of this because they've been a fan, not just because of new, because of old. Yeah. Because seeing the two different age groups just makes me hope, at least. Do you guys have any exciting stories?
Oh, exciting stories from the kind. They were all exciting stories. I interacted with some fantastic people, all con long. I moderated a couple panels that I probably had no business moderating, but still met fantastic people.
I'm gonna have to tell that story.
Yeah, I know you're. Give me their names so that I can get. So one of the last panel of the day that I was moderating was in the Land of Oz, which is all about the Wizard of Oz, and there's a comic book adaptation of the Frank L. Baum books. Now, that much I got off of the topic. That's about the extent of my knowledge on the topic, and I'm supposed to be moderating the panel. Of course, there's no Wi-Fi in our Marriott. That's a story I'll save, but they're going to get a strongly worded letter from me. It was a bad hotel.
It's just a Marriott.
The more I stay in them, the less I like them.
Yeah, I would agree.
And your cousin John Boy was there, and he also stayed in the Marriott, and they had the same laundry list of complaints that I had. Before I could even get into mine, they went into theirs.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, it's not just me. So,
yeah, we should say shout out to John Boy and his wife, Jenny. They were at the con this weekend. They came up and stayed overnight.
And awesome.
And my sister, Karen.
And your sister, Karen.
Her two kids and Sean.
And Colton. Zombie Fobby.
Yeah, Colton was there. Zombie Fobby.
He was also did some volunteer work, and he really... kind of became. Before I get into this story, we got to do this because Colton, helped us out. I think pretty substantially in some areas, but more than anything, Blake, who's at Top City Batman, if you want to follow him on Twitter, and then Mel, who's
Ink for Uni Who,
and then your kids, both Caitlin and Mason, were fantastic ambassadors for us. Really all weekend long, whether it was handing out flyers to people, which your kids did.
Which is hilarious, because we
they
go to sit down at the table, and I don't want to take away from the direction you were going, but we go to sit down at the table, our table, because we had a table there this year, and just kind of to rest and to be there in case anybody came and asked any questions, because I had a little bit of downtime. And Caitlin immediately goes, can we hand out flyers? Yes, you can hand out flyers. So they both try to grab a handful of flyers. Well, they're a little big for Mason's little hands. So she goes, will you hand out the cards? So he's got the little business card. She's got the flyers. And they walk. I say, make sure you stay where you're wearing. See you.
Yeah.
But they walked out in probably a 20, 30-foot radius out around our table and handed out flyers to everybody that was walking by. And, of course, they're cute kids, so you can't refuse
a flyer from them. Yeah.
You have to have a flyer for a cute kid.
Oh, Caitlin said there were a lot of people that said, no, thank you. But she handed out, quite a few, so.
Caitlin's going to be one of those holy terrors when she gets to that, would you like to buy some Girl Scout cookies?
Not looking forward to
it. It'll be like, here's my money.
Anyway.
But they were fantastic. And then Blake also, he handed out flyers before your Doctor Who panel.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just. He
had business cards on him at all times.
Yeah. I mean, they really worked it. So, definitely my thanks to that crew because they made us look good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We didn't make ourselves look very good, but they were phenomenal.
Anyway, this Oz panel.
So, this Oz panel. which has got Eric Schanauer, who writes the series, who is actually doing the adaptation, and apparently has been an Oz fan since birth. I don't know if you guys noticed, but I complimented him before the panel started on his wardrobe. I was like, is
he
this
was
a,
very sharp.
Are you like cosplaying as Oz, or is this? He says this is just my con attire. I'm like, I love it because it's almost like the Doctor's purple coat. It was very, you know, cool. And then
not many people go to a con in a shirt and tie and coat.
Anna Marie Cool, who did some illustrations for the novels,
right? She's not part of the comic book,
right?
But the novelizations, she has done some of the illustrations, and she draws in the same classic style as the illustrator of the original books. Escapes me now, but she does it in that style, and they're very reminiscent of that classic style of illustration. And she's got some gorgeous pieces. I walked by her table after I sat out on that panel, and she's got some wonderful work.
And
Scotty,
I can't think of his last name.
I can't think of his last name either. And it's not page. On there.
Oh, it's not on there.
No. Yeah, he's an artist.
He's an Scotty, artist. Yeah, hang on. He's not listed on the panel, but you looked at it. Hey, Scotty, who does all the artwork for these comics? So I kind of launched into this, quite honestly, I am ready to read this series now. I was going to read the Frank L. Baum Oz books before, but now I'm totally ready to read the comic adaptations because these guys had such passion for it. It was incredible. But you know, I threw them some softball questions initially and then got the crowd to, you know, do some Q&A and was stretching for time to fill that slot a little bit, but I thought that I did kind of sort of okay.
You did a fine job.
I can't really back that up. I thought I sucked.
Well,
I thought I was
terrible. Let me, a little preamble here. He asked me, hey,
I sucked.
What are you doing at 1 o'clock? And I said, I don't know. I've got a table sit at noon. I'm sitting until 1. Why? What do you need? Well, I'm moderating this panel, and I still haven't got a chance to do any research. You haven't done any research? Well, if I find my room. All right. So he says, I need you to come in there and, I don't know, maybe ask some questions. Because I don't know anything about the Frank L. Baum novels, and you've read them.
Yeah,
so
you're more of an Oz. I mean, of the when we went to Galley, that you were more the Dalek person, and I was more the, okay, so that makes sense for you to do that and me to do this. Of all the people I asked, really, you're more of the Oz person. You at least have some sort of basis in it. I'm not going to tell Kirk no, because it's like, yeah, absolutely, I'll do it. But I don't know anything about it. Young?
Yeah, Young. I got all the way to the bottom of the list here. Because I couldn't remember last name. Yeah, Scotty Young.
I went to the Planet Comic-Con website, and he spells his name with a K.
Yeah, well, that's why I knew I was going to find
it. And so then I didn't realize that, so I
That's why
did
I knew I was going to find it easy, but had it not been the very last name of the program, I'd have been there a lot sooner.
I ended up having to go to Comic Book DB to find his name.
I had Glenn in there as kind of my safety net, just in case, you know, it died out completely. I knew I could rely on you to lob some questions up that I could then, you know, maybe play off of. And
you had some people asking questions.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a dead panel. And the audience very much was interested in the topic. I think they just seemed very shy, like we're not sure what we want to ask.
Right.
I think it went okay. And some of the questions, I was a little surprised by some of them. Like, I kind of thought that maybe even, like I asked about the new movie and what they thought of Oz the Great and Powerful, and does that help them
that
from
was
the standpoint
kind
of...
None of them liked it.
None of them liked it.
Well, one hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, Anna Marie hadn't seen it.
But both Scotty and Eric were very much...
Scotty's reaction of it. That didn't stop me from pimping the movie and saying, hey, if you like that, come read my stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love that he was honest about it. That's so great.
You did a phenomenal job. You did a fine job. Yeah. You asked some relevant questions. You turned it over to the room. You guided the audience in the question, which is what a moderator should do.
Yeah.
I understand you weren't very proud of your final wrap-up question. Do you want to expound on that a little bit?
So, I could totally pull it. It wasn't my fault, because Mel had to leave to go get the next group of guests to bring into the room. She was my monitor for that point. So she's supposed to be the one in the audience going, here's the 5 minutes, here's the 10 minutes, you know, wrap it up thing. And she wasn't there. But I can't blame her. The fact of the matter is I had my phone out.
She told me.
She told you. And you gave the signal. And I looked at
15 minutes.
I know.
She was going to go leave.
I know.
She would be back.
You know, 15 minutes to the end is an eternity. But yeah,
it is. Really,
so I had my phone out, and it was like, okay, well.
Unless you're in the Daphne panel.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Then it was like, this is going too fast. We're not going to get all these questions.
We ran long. But so then I was like, well, you know, I think we're about to ready to wrap up, but I just want to ask you one more question. And my brain was going, why? You don't have another question. It came out of my mouth without just I opened it up and it fell out. It was like, so then I.
What was the question, Sean?
Wizard of Oz panel.
In the Land of Oz panel, where we've been talking about essentially the Wizard of Oz and all of its books. And
all of the offshoot media, all of the random movies.
Every little bit of Oz that you can... What was the question you asked at the very end?
I gave them the full-blown lean to one side, cock my head, and said, do you like The Wizard of Oz? And I swear... I wanted to just crawl away and die at that moment. I had nothing. I have never been that at a loss for words in my life. And I... Do you like The Wizard of Oz? And Eric obviously didn't know what to do with it, because he's like, do you like The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, Eric's response was great. He just turned it right back on you.
Yeah, let me talk some more, please. Oh, I feel so, and I apologize to him. I was like, I'm sorry I sucked. I'm sorry it was terrible. He's like, no, he says it was fine. And then he turned around and walked away. I was like, I'll never see these people. They're going to go, they'll never come back to Planet Comic Con, and it will be my fault. They will get angry emails up and down from, I don't know who that guy was, but yeah. So, not that they're listening, but on the behalf of Traveling the Vortex and myself, I would like to issue a formal apology to Scotty Young and Eric and Anna Marie, because I blew it.
So now to redeem yourself, you need to go get some of the graphic novels and read them all.
Yeah, you know what? I'm ready to, because it was such, they were so impassioned about it. It was such a great panel, up until that moment, it was such a great panel that I... I'm ready to read that series. And I love Scotty's comment about the drawing. Because if you haven't seen them, you've got to just Google the Wizard of Oz comic book. Because he draws...
Marvels.
The wonderful ones.
Because there's Marvels, a lot of them out there.
The first one's The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
But he commented that, you know, he draws the Cowardly Lion kind of like cotton balls. And I said, well, it's interesting because the first time I ever saw that... Because it doesn't look like a lion. When you say lion, it doesn't look anything to me like what I would... picture that being drawn.
Especially if you're doing a comic.
Not that it's bad, it's just not what I would envision. But he says I wanted him to be kind of soft and, you know, there. And I said, because my honest to goodness first impression was a dandelion, because he's got this hair that just kind of sprouts off of his face and dangles out there. And I said, if you went, he'd blow away. And he was so taken with that. He said, I'm rewriting my entire back history of how I created that character. I'm going to steal that. I'm like, sure, dude, take it, dude. So. That's just what it looked like. But yeah, so that was my shining moment of the con. Do you like The Wizard of Oz? I really hope somebody asks me, do you like Doctor Who sometime when I'm on a panel? And I'll be like, I never thought about it. I don't know how to answer that one. And then I'll take a cue from Eric. I don't know. Idiot. Yeah.
To give you credit, and I explained this earlier, I thought maybe you were trying to formulate the, do you like the 1938 movie,
The Wizard of Oz?
Because while we had talked, they had talked a little bit about the movie itself, none of them ever really addressed whether they were fans of that film, that particular version.
Right.
So I thought that's where you were going with it, but didn't quite fall out that way.
No. I got nothing.
It's like the kid in the back of the room that asks the question that's already been asked.
Yeah.
And they're so cute and endearing that you go ahead and answer the question, you know, and you try to formulate it because they were
like
so
Josh.
Brave.
Like Josh did. Well, they we answered so that, but brave. I'll give you another answer.
They were so brave that they did, you know, and it's really cute. Oh, look how brave that little 5-year-old was. You can't do that. Well, Sean, look how brave that 40-year-old was asking a question
that's
been answered number of times tonight.
Yeah. I don't know. I really... If there was an interior monologue in my head, you know, of Christmas Story, and he's like, where are you going? Wake up, stupid. Yeah, that was it. Just could not stop myself from doing it.
Well, don't say it. Don't ask the question. Do you like the Wizard of Oz? No!
It was painful. I saw my career that I don't have evaporate from my eyes. Just, oh.
Or maybe you have an anecdotal story to tell when you go on the talk show circuit someday, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be one of those. How did you get your start? Well, it's a funny story. It wasn't very illustrious. There I was in the Oz panel.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your panel.
Yours went much better than mine.
Let's talk about your panel.
Which we're going to release as a side
trip. Had another panel today. You had the cosplaying, which I think you talked a little bit about.
I did the cosplaying one, too.
That one went a little more smooth.
Again, considering that I'm not the guy that knows anything about cosplaying, but they really...
There was also a little bit bigger of a crowd for that one.
A lot bigger of a crowd, because we filled that room.
A lot of questions.
Yeah, but a lot of questions, and we had... I'm not going to remember names now, but we had... Orlando Pagan was there, and he did that. And then a couple of guys from the 501st, and...
Bill Holmes?
Bill. That's what I was trying to say.
Holy Messenger?
Holy. She was the one that did...
Holy Messenger?
Holy Messenger.
Victoria Schmidt and Meg Turney.
Meg Turney could not be
there. Meg was not there,
yeah,
but
she was doing professional
She had a representative,
stuff,
didn't she?
Who was Josh, somebody who's actually working on
the Nerdist Channel
show for Sci-Fi
on YouTube.
Channel.
On YouTube. World. It's on YouTube.
He's on YouTube.
The Nerdist channel is different from the Sci-Fi one.
The Nerdist YouTube channel.
That's where I was confused then, because at the end of that panel, I had to sign a release for my likeness to be used on Cosworld, which is the Sci-Fi one.
The Sci-Fi one would have been there.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what was throwing me. But yeah. So yeah, I might be on TV showing what little I know and being Donahue because I was running that microphone all over the room. But because we didn't have the stand, you know, for questions. So I grabbed the extra mic and stretched it out as far as I could and then realized I was in the camera shot. So I was like, I did Donahue. No lie. But your panel went much better.
It ended up being a completely packed room. I was surprised.
Standing room only. There were people standing lined along the back. That shows you how much of a Doctor Who presence, because we weren't even in the smallest room and we filled in, the Doctor.
We were in the smallest
panel.
We were in the smallest panel room.
I was thinking that was D.
But Daphne's was in B, and it was full.
No, we were in D. B is the smaller room.
Is it?
No.
D is smaller.
D is smaller.
I think that's wrong.
I think you're wrong.
No, here's the reason
there's a
why.
Map.
Here. Look at the map.
Yeah, but one is...
D is definitely smaller.
Oh, that is. It's because it's long ways, though. It's not
that's
as deep.
Not
it's
as
not
deep.
As deep. That's
it's not as deep.
Because the stage is
needed to be in B,
over here in B.
Okay.
Well, and that's like Kirk said. He says, well, lesson learned. Doctor Who never goes in the small room.
Right,
it's like,
woo-hoo! Right.
And not that it was a small room. We joked that we were in the smallest room. This is still a good-sized ballroom.
Well, they were much better than some of the rooms at the old venue.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kirk made it sound like whatever was in B wasn't as nearly as full as what we had.
Yeah, he said we easily could have swapped the two and been fine.
But
so it was great to see that turn out. We had a lot of good questions. We kind of tossed it over to Tina from Kansas City Timeless Society to kind of introduce what they're about, kind of give them a plug. And then I asked Josh a few questions. And then we opened it up to the floor and got a lot of good questions.
And if people don't know, Josh
Adams
is a...
He works for IDW.
Illustrator and
inker.
Inker for, IDW, which is the company that does the Doctor Who comics. And he's currently working on Matt Smith's Doctor and Amy and Rory, some of those stories.
Because that's the run they're doing.
And he had the greatest comment about drawing Matt Smith. And I'm not going to repeat it because I know we're going to release that later.
Yeah.
You have to tune back in to find out what he said.
We won't go into the details of the panel because we do have a side trip plan for that. But.
Yes. But he gave such good answers for everything. I didn't know what to expect. I went out and introduced myself beforehand. He seemed very nice.
He was nice. He was personal. And he's a fan. I mean,
he's a huge
fan.
He's
on top of it.
Yeah.
Not just new, but old and
classic.
Yeah. Across the board, he knows his stuff.
And he's genuinely friendly and funny. Some of the answers he gave was just so fantastic. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I just want to touch on this because it is comic related. His favorite companion being the robotic dinosaur from the comics.
Right.
I had no idea this character even existed.
Yeah.
And it makes me want to go back and look and see see those issues. In fact, somebody came up to me afterwards and was like, "Do you know what issues those are?" I'm like, "No, you'll have to go talk to Josh about it." And he would know.
Yeah, he's a very, very charismatic guy. Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
And a lot of energy in that room. A lot of, again, that was real exciting to see Hoodum come together.
Yes.
and just
I was overwhelmed by the response.
Just relish in it for a little bit. And while it was a lot of, well, who's your favorite companion and who's your favorite monster? It didn't matter. It was just kind of like, this is, sure, why not? Let's talk about it. And Josh seemed very down for it. So.
Yeah, he did. And when I was asking him comic questions, he kind of didn't almost I got the impression that he'll talk about the comic stuff, but he's just such a big fan, he just wants to talk about the show in general, just from the questions I gave him. And then we got some other great comic questions in the crowd too, so nice, good focus.
Well, thank you.
You were one of them. Blake's question was phenomenal too.
Blake had a great question.
But go follow Josh at Josh Adams on Twitter. He's on Twitter, and you can get all his information there.
Cool.
What about your panel that you moderated, Glenn?
You know, that was we're going to leave that one for last because we're going to actually include Daphne's panel that we did. The TARDIS has landed. Is next. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about the con before we move on to that? And we'll just close the show with our The TARDIS Has Landed panel, our live show at Planet Comic Con.
If you live in the area and have the opportunity, you must come to Planet Comic Con. It was a bigger and better, which is what they promised. They said it's going to be bigger and better than last year, and I think it was. In every conceivable way, it was bigger. And 99% of the ways better than last year's. I think any of the hiccups that they did run into this year
were minor,
especially considering the move. That's the thing that really, really surprised me is that, the little things like with the food and this, but those were not Planet Comic Con issues.
And they were deal breakers.
They were not deal breakers.
There was, in my opinion, there was nothing that I think anybody there would have said, I absolutely will not come back again because of this.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything there.
At least nothing that we encountered.
Yeah. There were minor hiccups, but again, nothing was bad. And Kirk was already talking about, well, we've got to do this and dress it. And I pointed out, I was like, yeah, but it's your 13th year. So you were cursed from the start. And he laughed and said, well, I didn't think of that.
And a new venue.
Yeah, that and a new venue and you're past it? Hey, no sweat, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're in the area, you definitely got to block it out on your schedule and plan to come. If you are an artist or a comic book person or a media guest, please come to Planet Comic Con in Kansas City because it's an up-and-coming thing and it's
not even really up-and-coming anymore. Large cons run for their money now.
Yeah. I was talking to...
It's a small large con now what it is.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's a minor major.
Yeah, exactly.
I was talking to the... Not Vito, but the other person with Daphne.
Justin somebody.
Yeah, as we were escorting her back to her table. And he was saying how... This looks like it's going to be an up-and-coming Dragon Con.
Oh, terrific.
Like, it's on its way to be a Dragon Con.
It was one of the minor majors, and it's really moved up.
It's moved up.
And it's still, from what I understand, an intimate and small enough thing, not like San
Diego. Right, it's not San Diego Comic-Con or Wizard World.
From what I've heard of a lot of people is, forget San Diego, go to Dragon Con.
Yeah.
And then, so if you're in the area, come. If you're a media personality or artist, come. If you're not in the area and would like to come visit beautiful Kansas City, come. I mean,
I talked to somebody in line that drove from Iowa.
Well, see, there you go. I mean, Chrissy could come down. She's only in Utah.
Yeah.
It's a day and a half drive.
Or you can fly. We have an airport.
Hey, we've got... Yeah.
You can even fly into downtown directly. It might cost you more to fly into downtown.
But there's cheap flights, too, to KCI. So, come check it out. It's definitely
a
good deal.
Let's take a listen to our show live at Planet Comic-Con.
Live at Planet Comic-Con!
This is Daphne Ashbrook, and I'm traveling the Vortex. I'm Glenn Bartlett.
And he's...
Oh! He's Sean, and we are joined by the very lovely Daphne Ashbrook.
Yay!
Well, we usually start our show out. We do a podcast called Traveling the Vortex, and we usually start a show out asking each other what we've done for the week or the weekend. But we know what we're doing this weekend, so we're going to get right on and start talking to Daphne, all right? So, first of all, welcome to Planet Comic Con. Now, this is your first time at Planet Comic Con, right?
Totally. Had no idea. Oh, my God. And I'm so thrilled to see such a huge crowd. I didn't know there were so many Whovians out here. Woohoo! Thank you.
I got a mic that doesn't work, so I'm just going to steal this one.
Okay, very good.
First of all, I want to take a poll here. How many people in this room are Doctor Who fans?
And the hands.
The majority of them, I like to see that. How many people in this room are Star Trek fans? And do you know that Daphne has something in common with both of those things? She's been in both. Yes, absolutely. But first, let's start off talking about Doctor Who, because that's what our podcast is about. Sorry. First of all, you probably have the distinct privilege of being the first American companion.
Right. I am, I think, the only female American companion who has also been on the Star Trek franchise. I think that makes sense. So it's like a short list, and I'm right in there. I feel very, very privileged.
I do American in air quotes, because we all know that Perry was supposed to be American. But
But it wasn't. She wasn't
she's
really.
Actually British. I don't know if you knew that. Anyway. What was it like coming to Doctor Who, especially a British institution that they're getting ready to essentially try to relaunch in the United States? They're going to make this movie, Doctor Who the movie, with Paul McGann. What was it like coming to Doctor Who? Did you know anything about Doctor Who when you went into it?
I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. And, you know, acting is something that you kind of have to do if you end up doing it a lot of times. I think it's just something you got to do. And in L.A. anyway, I don't think it's the same in New York, and I'm not sure what it's like in England, but I have a feeling it's a little more comparable to the New York vibe if you're an actor, which is, there's a family there, you know, of a community. I come from theater, and that's what I love about theater. There's a community, there's a family kind of feeling, and even if it is only short-lived, it's still a family, and there's a unit, and I like that, and I miss that, actually. I don't do enough theater, but when I moved to L.A. from San Diego, that's where I'm from, I moved to L.A., I found out that it's kind of a cold, kind of lonely kind of place to be an actor, let alone a person, a human, living there, doing anything. It's so spread out, you know, but you sort of feel sort of on your own, and so I had no idea what Doctor Who was. I knew that I had read the script, that I really liked it. I thought the character was fabulous. I knew a little bit about Paul McGann. I had seen With Nell and I and loved him in that. And I loved that movie. And I laughed so hard. And I thought, great, I would love to work with him. But I knew nothing at all. And so we start shooting the show, and I'm slowly but truly getting educated by, Sylvester McCoy and Paul McGann. And so we're sitting, and we shot almost the entire movie we shot at night. So, which is probably okay for Paul and Sylvester, since they would have been jet lagged otherwise, right?
We were
really
on
their time.
On that schedule,
so,
right?
So we were up all night long. It's kind of that, talk about lonely and isolated. Anyone who's worked the night shift, you kind of feel like you're maybe the only person on the planet. It's a very strange kind of existence. So if there's a little posse of people working around you, you kind of feel like it's us against the world. I don't know. That's the way I felt anyway. It was pretty cool. But we'd sit around and make jokes, and they'd teach me how to say things, you know, with the dialect, and they'd point and laugh, and I would humor them. So it was really, it was actually actually a heck of a lot of fun. But yeah, slowly but surely you started getting educated about what Doctor Who was. I still could not have understood, and still to this day, every so often I'll just sort of pinch myself and go, what? These guys want to hear what I have to say? So yeah, it's like an onion. It keeps peeling, and I keep getting a new layer of understanding to the community and the family, and I'm very honored to be a part of it.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about fandom, because, I mean, obviously you said when you came to Doctor Who you didn't know anything about it. So you the weight of the importance, at least to the UK, that it was, probably wasn't there.
We shot in Vancouver, and so yeah, they knew a little bit about it, but no, it's not the same.
It just wasn't there.
No.
So as you have been around in fandom and gone to conventions and whatnot and talked to fans, what's it been like to kind of learn about and explore Doctor Who in that sense? What's that been like for you?
Well, you know what? I'm still learning. I have to say this. I'm going to just be honest. I'm going to say something I haven't said before. This is a little dangerous. But I really have learned to be a fan of Doctor Who just like you guys. I mean, I'm a fan, you know. And I've watched a smattering of old ones, the classics and stuff. And then I've watched a smattering of the new stuff. And I started getting more and more and more and watching it every week and kind of tuning in like you guys. You know, it's sorry, little Mike. I'm a fan. And I have to say that my real true experience of losing my companion was Amy and Rory. And I'm not over it. Okay, I'm not over it. I kind of don't like it. I'm still kind of mad at you guys. I don't know why. But it's like not okay for me yet. And I really like Clara. Nothing against her. I think she's beautiful, my God, and mysterious and feisty and all those wonderful things. But I'm still not over losing Amy and Rory. And I will one day, I guess, get over it. But maybe I won't. I don't know. Maybe I'm not like you guys. So I don't know. But it's a little hard for me. But I know that Doctor Who is like, that's the way it is. I mean, I'm reading this stuff on Tumblr. I know what y'all are saying out there. It's like saying stuff about Matt and la-da-da. But you know what? I guess I get attached. So, but I don't know. I think maybe I'm not cut out for this. I don't want to lose anybody. So I love it.
Aside from Paul, who would be your doctor now that you've started kind of getting into the show?
Oh, man. See, yeah. I've been asked that. And, you know, how do you answer that, right?
I mean, the obvious answer is
I have
Paul,
to say,
work with them.
Well, Paul is my doctor. He will always be my doctor.
He's who you were introduced to.
He's stuck with me.
Yeah.
yeah. You know, he's trapped. and I just got lucky. But, no, he's adorable. Great actor. Made me a better actor. Much better actor working with him. He raised my level. So, yay. Thank you, Paul. But I have to say, Sylvester McCoy, I've fallen in love with him. So, and he will be a part in my heart for the rest of my life. I absolutely adore that man. He's a good, good friend. I see him when he comes to California. I see him when I go over there. He makes me laugh nonstop. Plays the spoons on me and others. And he's just, he's like the Energizer Bunny. He's one of those freaky people that never runs out of energy. kills me. And I know his family and his son. I just love him. So on that level, that's where my heart is. But shoot, you know, I think there's so many brilliant doctors. It's really, really super hard to choose. I like number two a lot.
Well, you just recently watched Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yes, I did. And I sort of went, oh, yeah, get it, right?
Tomb of the Cybermen is kind of that episode that does that to people.
You know, I love Colin Baker. I've met him. He's adorable, right? Brilliant.
Some Colin Baker fans.
I could go on and on. So it's really super hard to choose, and I may just finally put my foot down and say, I'm not choosing. I love them all. I love them for different reasons. But, you know, Paul McGann will always be my doctor. And then, of course, Sylvester, he's in my heart. So there you go. Boring, long answer, but I love him, you know?
Were there any antics on the set with those two guys? Because I know that they can be kind of clowns every once in a while.
Very
professional, but sometimes...
Yeah, sometimes. When it's about the work, when you're action cut between those two things... Hell, I don't know if it's an English training kind of thing, and maybe probably because they both came from theater too. But you take that part seriously, but not seriously like seriously as a heart attack. You know, it is a game that you're playing. It's make-believe. And it's fun. Even the tragic stuff is really fun to do because when you're doing it right, it kind of, oh, I did that. You know, it's just good. So on that level, they were complete pros all the time. When it came to sitting around for hours and hours waiting for them to set up the shots and move the lights around and stuff, yeah, you're sitting in the dark. So, yeah, they had a lot of fun at my expense. I'm not going to lie. Which I'm so happy to be. I mean, I'm a good straight man, I think. So, yeah, we weirdly got along great. And I don't completely understand it. But Paul and I, weird kind of immediate ability to kind of laugh at each other and have a good time. And that was from day one. So from the first read through. So I got lucky, and I think it shows on screen. I think it worked on the screen, too. Can I answer your question? I have no idea.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I want to ask, for the Whovians in the room,
yes,
there is something magical. Magical.
Magical. I like that word. I'm going to save that for myself.
Absolutely. You can have that. About seeing the inside of the TARDIS for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and seeing it through the companion's eyes. Now, not coming from the background of knowing mm-hmm. about the show, how cool was it for you to walk onto that set? Obviously, you read it, you kind of knew what you were getting into, and then all of a sudden you walked onto that set,
right.
which is just awesome.
Well, that's the thing. I really lucked out, because I know the older shows did not have the kind of financing that our show did, and I think that's part of, some people have a little issues with the movie because it was a little, they threw money at it compared to the older stuff. And so it was always a weird kind of balancing act. Do you go all the way or do you try to, how much of the old classic Who stuff do you want to make sure you protect and continue on with? And how far do you go with the special effects, et cetera, et cetera? And so there was certainly a lot more money involved in the movie than there was in the show before shows before us. But for an actor's, from my little perspective, especially being as ignorant as I was, it was really easy to walk inside the TARDIS and go, oh, my God, you know, because it was one of the most magnificent sets I'd been on. Huge, high, like this, you know, ceilings. And the artwork and the detail that they put into that was amazing. It's still gorgeous to this day. It's beautifully done. So, and I didn't have a clue that was going to be there. So I walked in and it was a real reaction. What can I say? I wasn't acting.
Did you get a little flutter back when last year at Gallifrey 1 you were kind of reunited with the TARDIS console that they had refurbished and brought up?
Well, I'm not going to lie. That's not the first time. The year before I think we saw it, and maybe even a year prior to that. I'm not sure. No, just in 2011. So I had seen it, and here's a weird story. This is so weird to me. The guy who owns it is American. He inherited it somehow. I'm not sure how, but he lives in my neighborhood. So my console from my movie is in my neighborhood at this American's house. Weird. Really weird.
Small
and he's
world.
One of the nicest guys, Paul Salamoff. Yeah. Sweetest guy on the planet. And not only that, there's some pictures on my website. If you want to see some weird stuff that guy, it's like walking into a scary, cool museum of Doctor Who. Stuff is everywhere. It's very, very cool. And the console lives in his garage. So there you go. Very strange. It's a pretty console, though, isn't it? The console.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yes.
Very steampunk. If you like steampunk, it's a
yeah.
I think that's the most appealing thing about it. I think is just kind of the old antiquey look of it, but it's like science fiction, and it basically pilots the TARDIS.
I love that too. I do.
Now, because of some rights issues with the film, the character of Grace has not returned in. Now, Paul's doing some big finish, doing as the Doctor, but Grace hasn't returned in Big Finish, correct? Because of some of the rights issues with that?
Grace has not, but Daphne has.
That's what I was going to ask you, because you have done some roles now. Talk a little bit about some of the voice roles that you've done in Doctor Who and what it's like recording as opposed to, you know, doing something on the big screen or the small screen or whatnot.
Okay. First of all, it's great. You'll hear this from every actress, especially probably actors too. But actresses, it's great because you don't have to worry about hair and makeup and dressing up, right? You just roll out of bed. You can go in there and look fabulous. Let me see. The first one I did, I was terrified. I had not done this. It was back in 2004. It was called The Next Life, and I was playing the role of perfection. Talk about pressure, okay? It was the first time I'd seen Paul since shooting the movie, so I was a little, oh, my God. And what else? I had no experience with doing audio drama, so... It was a big finish in England, and we went in there. I went in there, and oh, also horribly jet lagged. I could not get unjet lagged the entire time I was there. I mean, I was in. I couldn't spell my own name. I was so out of it. And the script itself for this, The Next Life, was like 2 inches thick. It was huge. Lots of dialogue. Get it going. And I was terrified, so I went in there. Luckily, Gary Russell was directing it, and anybody who knows Gary knows he's brilliant. And he was directing it. I knew him. He was one of the few people I had already previously met. And of course, it was Paul. And it was like we'd never been apart, ever. So that was great. I'm playing perfection, and Gary, one of the things Gary said to me while I was doing it, he's like, you know, think Joan Collins. And it's weirdly, I had worked with Joan Collins, so who's really down to earth. You'd be amazed. She's like a really wonderful lady. She's just down to earth, sweet, supportive, the whole thing. You'd never think that about Joan Collins, but she is. She's delightful. So anyway, so he said, think Joan Collins. And I did what I did, and it was a lot of fun, but it was exhausting. It was a workout. And since then, I've done Tales from the Vault with Yiji, and that was the first time I'd worked with Yiji So from the movie since we shot the movie. And we did that in England as well. And then we just finished recording a sort of sequel to that called Tales from the Vault Mastermind. And I didn't get to shoot that or record that with anyone. So I was in L.A. They'd already recorded everybody else. And I had to work with this wonderful actor who's on Bold and Beautiful. What's his name? Andrew Collins. Fabulous. I mean, this was not easy text. And this guy would sit down and read through it once and go, okay, ready to go. And he just, boom, do it. And he was just doing that as a favor to help me do my performance. He wasn't actually the characters. He was reading all of the other characters for me, basically. So that was my experience in L.A., and hopefully that one turns out well. Now you know all the backstory to that. It could really suck, and it would be because of me, and because I was not there with anybody else, but hopefully it won't. Hopefully it'll be fabulous. Yuji's in that one as well.
Well, let's transition a little bit to Star Trek. Deep Space Nine is one of my favorite sci-fi shows.
Me too. Hello. Yay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the episode you guest starred in is one of the pinnacles, I think, of the show. It's one of the best episodes I remember from the series.
That's nice. Thank
like,
you.
What was it like being on the set for Deep Space Nine? Especially with the constrictions you had to have on you.
Right.
If you guys don't remember the episode, Daphne's an alien who...
I'm Elasian. I was Elasian.
Yes.
Don't forget that.
From a low gravity world, so the gravity on Deep Space Nine was so tremendous on her, she had to have a wheelchair to move around.
Right. My character was Melora. The episode's called Melora, and there's, I think I'm the only one of those people that they ever did. So, and that was at the time, it was really expensive to paint each and every frame of film, to paint out the strings that would hold us when we floated in the room. And it was really expensive back then. They could do it like this today, but back then it was really expensive, so they just never brought the species back, right? So anyway, it was like, oh, whatever. But no, the guy who wrote it was in a wheelchair and had worked really hard at making sure that that story got told. He came to the set while we were shooting to talk, and I have someone in my family who's in a wheelchair, and also had played a couple parts in the past where I was in a wheelchair too. So kind of had done some work, personal research and professional research on that and what that means. And so when I'm doing this, it was a power chair, so it was easy to sort of get around in it. But those sets were a little dicey. There was lots of this hills and peaks and valleys on that set, lots of strange little hallways. And also I was wearing these fake braces up here and all the way down the legs and arms, and they were plastic, so they were constantly snapping. And I was in a jumper, you know, that they make all the ensigns wear, the jumpers, one piece. You got to take the whole thing off to go to the potty. So every time I had to use the potty, I would have to take the whole thing off, and all of this plastic stuff would have to come off too, and it would snap. So there was a guy just with the duct tape right there, duct taping me back together again. I'll tell you a weird story about that in a second. But anyway, so lots of duct tape. And then, of course, there's 4.5 hours at least of hair and makeup in the morning. Whereas the cast, the crew, the rest of the cast and the crew, they don't get called to the set for several hours. So you're up with the poor hair and makeup people, and you crawl in there at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you sit down in the chair, and they go to work, and then you're finally done and you're exhausted. You get up and you start your day. And anybody who watched that show or any of the Star Trek shows realizes too that the language itself is a different language, and it's made up. So I had to kind of learn that on top of everything else that was going on, and found out that one of the scenes I had to eat gak. Yeah, I see you over there laughing.
If you haven't seen the episode,
let me just say like something.
Yeah, if you're not familiar, it looks like worms.
No, it doesn't look like worms. Let me tell you something about
that.
Is it
actually?
It was so hideous. Right? I am tough. I feel like I can say that I'm a tough broad. That's right. Tough broad here, right here. But I had no idea that a bowl of writhing worms, earthworms, would literally stop everything. It just was like over at that point when they brought that out and they put it. It's so gross. It's like they should be, you know, like brought up on charges for torturing worms. But they put them in like warm water, so they moved like this. It was so gross, you guys. So gross. And I had to act like, oh, bring that over here. Yeah. And they were so strict on that set. You know, I get the paragraph of all this crazy dialogue, and then another paragraph, and another paragraph, and you try to do it all in one take, and then you get one little word like the wrong, and you had to start from the beginning. They were very strict. You had to know that down, backwards and forwards, get it right, or you start over and do the whole thing again. No pickups, none of that. They wouldn't allow it. It was intense. So here I am now faced with the gach. Is that what I'm saying there, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, they all say. It just kills me. Kills me. I love you people. I do. But I'm sitting there, and I've got to touch them. I've got to do this. I've got to touch them. I've got to pick them up in my hands. And they thought this was hilarious, just like you over there, smiling, laughing. I know.
I wouldn't be able to do it. I don't like worms.
Oh.
So I can understand the discomfort you felt.
See, it wasn't like I had anything against worms. I want to get that straight. Nothing against worms. But this was gross. This was so gross. So basically, they took pity on me and let me shoot the scene with all the dialogue. I tried to hold it together, bring the worms, there they are. And I'm like, oh, la, 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 la. Pick them up, and they'd cut. And they had a bucket right next to my chair just in case I had to throw up. I did not throw up. I want you all to know that. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's the tough broad. It's so gross. I can't
describe.
That's
certainly a testament to your acting skills.
You know
because
what?
I watched that and I thought, wow, she must really like this.
Yeah.
Because I just bought it. I thought, oh, she likes them.
Yeah, so. No, Sid, I think at one point even had to pick one up and eat it, like, you know, on camera. I was probably supposed to, but they probably said, no, that's a bridge too far. So he picks one up that was plastic, like those little rubber things. And then... like eating, you know, like some pasta, you know, sucked it in like that. Even that was so gross at that point. I was just like, oh, whatever. So, yeah, it was a great role, but it was challenging. It really was.
You spent a lot of time on screen with Alexander Siddig. How was he to work with?
He's another fabulous actor, right? I think. If anybody's ever seen the... Gosh, what was that called? Oh, my God. Does anybody know the... It was like a sequel to Lawrence of Arabia. And it was with Ralph Fiennes. And they're both babies, basically. They're so early on in their career. And he'd shot that before he did Deep Space. And I'd seen that. It's a brilliant movie. I cannot remember the name of it. I'm going to have to go home and IMDb him. But it is so good. If you get a chance to get that off Netflix or whatever, it's really a beautiful film. And he's incredible. Rafe is incredible. So, yeah, made me a better actor. He was very supportive. I was very nervous. I was the fish out of water. These guys had been saying this dialogue and living these long hours. I did my longest... day of work on that show, 20 hours on that show in one fell swoop. I got sick. I stopped drinking liquid because every time I took everything, this would snap and break off. So I stopped drinking liquid. I ate very little just to not have to use the restroom so much. And I did. I got sick at the end of that. And Siddig and the rest of them were all really super supportive. And you know, everybody has to, you know, be together to get that show shot. So 9-day shoot. And real quick, extra little weird story. I was at a convention. I'm sitting next to this guy for days. And it was when I launched my book. And I talk about all this stuff at length in the book. And... there I am talking about the book. I'm talking about it. And he said, wait. And he finally turns to me several days into this. And he goes, so you were on Deep Space Nine? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And he goes, which one? And I went, you know, Laura. And he's like, oh, yeah, I worked that show. And I was like, really? Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I tell stories in the book about how every time I turn around, this guy with duct tape, I was like, he says, that was me. I was the guy duct taping him. So, yeah, small world.
Okay, so, Doctor Who the movie.
Yeah.
You got to kiss the Doctor.
Yes.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Got to kiss the Doctor.
Got to kiss the Doctor.
What is that with the Doctors? I have a thing for Doctors, I guess.
Who's better?
Well, I would have to say, first of all, I like funny. So, we had a comic kiss. Which I'd actually forgotten about until I saw the movie again. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. It wasn't just one kiss at the end that was all, bye. It was the kiss in the park. It was hilarious. Do that again. So that was one of my favorite moments. Great kiss there. But it's hard to top kissing while floating. I was floating when I kissed Dr. Bashir. We kissed in midair, if you will. So, yeah, they were both pretty chaste kisses. So, but they were both doctors. I think that's odd. And I'm wondering, did Bashir kiss other people after that?
Yeah.
Because I don't know if he kissed anybody prior to that.
I don't think so.
So I sort of like turned these guys into kissers or something.
Well, we're going to open it up to the room here in just a moment, but I do want to say that not only are we talking Doctor Who and Star Trek, but you've also done some CSI, right?
Yes, I did Law CSI, and NCIS, JAG.
Oh, CIS, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, JAG. So you've run the gamut of
I've been
of
around. I'm really old.
But I think that maybe some people don't realize that you're also a very talented singer. that you have a beautiful voice.
Let me sing us a little something. Just kidding. I'm not going to do it.
talk a little bit about the music career, because it's relatively new, right? You haven't been doing this for a long time.
Well, actually, no. I grew up, my dad's a director, was a director and an actor. My mom's an actress. She's still living. And I started in theater. And so I did a lot of musical theater and would sing. As a matter of fact, I think I was 12 when I auditioned for my dad and sang a song. And he realized I could sing. And so that's when I actually started to really sing. As far as recording an album, you know, you think about it, people talk about it, blah, blah, blah. You get busy. You just don't. It's a whole other career. So, but now I have a daughter who is 24 and attending Juilliard and in the acting department. And she sings. And I was about to send her off to college, and we were sitting in the lobby waiting for something, and we started to sing a Joni Mitchell tune in this lobby, and we had great acoustics. It was so cool. And she started singing all these harmonies to the song, and so we just sat there, and it was like I could not believe how cool it sounded. So at that point, I was like, well, now that she's going off to college, perfect timing. No. When she came back from college, I was just like, we're doing this album. It was my birthday. She didn't have anything for me, so I used it as a wedge. And I said, you will now give me my birthday present. That forced her to sing on the album, poor thing. But she is. She's all over the album. I just picked a bunch of songs that I love. I love Patti Griffin, Joni Mitchell, Sean Colvin, and many, many more that didn't make it on the album. We even have almost enough for another album still, halfway recorded. So we're working on the next one. But it was just a real labor of love. And it was a different animal. Again, different than singing live on stage. Total different animal. Totally different. So not a lot of feedback other than my producer giving me notes. no. Yay! Which I always love. So... But it was fun, and I'm really glad I did it. It's one of those things to sort of check off the bucket list, you know?
Yeah, where can they
find it? Oh, and they find it at DaphneAshbrook.com. And everywhere else. It's on Dummerpala Records, and it's on Amazon, and it's CD Babies, and it's just everywhere. So just, yeah.
It's called?
Google.
What's the name of it?
It's called Grace Notes. I'm sorry, Grace Notes. Get it? Yeah, see, you got it.
Well, I obviously want to take some questions from the audience. So, if you're gonna, you got the mic. Okay, now, if you want to step up here to the mic,
come on down.
We'll take some questions.
Dangerous Man.
Dangerous Man.
Lawrence After Arabia.
Ah, see, thank you.
So you don't have to end up with now.
First, I want to congratulate you on being one of the first companions to die and being brought back to life.
Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that. We need to make a list.
We give all this credit to Rory and Clara, but never to Grace Helms.
You know what? We need to sit down and make a list, because there's like five. Every time I turn around, there's another, oh, you were the only one, or you were the first one. And I never even thought of that, but you're right. I died and came back to life. Hence the book I wrote, Dead Women Laughing. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you for starting a trend. We all know the recurring theme of companions come back. Harry comes back. Sarah Jane has come back. If Grace Halloway was to come back, which doctor would you like her to come back with?
You really going to ask me that question?
I'm sure none of them are listening.
Yeah, nobody hears this. You know what? I really would like to explore the relationship between my doctor and Grace after a period of time, because I think that's what's interesting, for him to come back and say, what the hell happened to you? And I'm not even kidding. I think that would be a groovy show. But I like kind of darker kind of things anyway, and funny black humor, you know, that I like. But you know what I mean? I love all of, I think Eccleston is incredibly talented. Tennant's amazing. Matt Smith is adorable and brilliant. Again, Colin Baker, all of those guys. They're just all fabulous actors. And so, stick some great writers on there. I'm not going to complain. Whichever doctor they want to put me with, I'm there. I'll go for it. You know what I mean? Thank you. I wish I could answer better, but hard one.
All right, trying to figure figure out where my window is.
That's okay.
Anyway, I did want to go ahead and say that I really loved, as a companion for Dr. Groove, that you were someone who was played very assertively. You know, a lot of the characters that we love have, you know, this...
Yes, the damsel in distress syndrome.
Yes, and it was something I was, when I was here watching it recently, I was thinking about, oh my gosh, this is like Mulder and Scully. Thinking, I'm going around saying, no, reality is reality, and it's just a solid piece of ground. And it's like, oh, no, it's not. And she has, you know, she has to be
a practical kind of feet on the ground.
Exactly. And she's, you know, she's not someone who really gets saved. She's saving the rest of the world.
Right? Hello? Yeah.
Because ultimately, I've watched this again recently, and I've seen it dozens of times, but it really is grace that kind of saves everything.
That's right.
It's,
okay.
She's really the hero. I mean,
yeah.
The doctor does his thing. But it,
he does his thing. Really, he points me in the right direction, but it's right. Really me, because he's busy with the thing on his head and the eyes and the thing, and he's bugging out, and Master's doing bad things to him, and he sends me off to save the planet, so I had to do all of that, and I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
How are the TARDISs?
My intention was sort of as a fan, because I'm with you on how you fall in love with the companion, and then you sort of, when they leave, you're going, oh, there should be like a helpline. Is that I wanted to mention in the last episode of the book that Clara was talking to the kid about?
Yeah.
Summer Falls is written by Amelia Williams.
Really?
Because it's Rory with Rory Williams.
Oh.
But Amy.
Those are wicked.
Was Amelia, and she said Amy is the grown-up name.
See, I love that stuff. See how clever they are? They're clever. I love that. I love layers like that. Thank you for that. Yes, sir.
I'm Sean Muir, and I'm with the Comedians of Wichita, and I'd like to ask you two questions.
Yes.
First question, would you like a jelly baby?
Need you say more? Bring it over here, baby. Terryman, thank you. Yay! There he is, Brent.
The question basically boils down to, do you think that the writing for the TV movie pilot opened the door to having the Doctor romantically involved with his companion? Because before that, you only really have two companions that sort of go in that sort of push. One is Jo Grant. The Doctor pines after she leaves because... She finds, oh, I found a young doctor. I'll go with him. See you later. And then there's Sarah Jane. And Sarah Jane leaves, and he's like, oh. So after that, you pretty much have serial killer, the TARDIS, smutty companion from Gallifrey, a bunch of kids, and Brett from America, who gets basically dumped on a beach. But you don't have any romantic interests for the Doctor until you. And then after that, it's like, oh, look, it's Rose.
Right. That's what I agree. I think...
My heart.
Yes. I think that... that Barry was sort of obviously, you know, broken. You know, I just was lucky enough to play the part and get to kiss him. But, you know, the writers decided to go there. And I have to say, years after this, I was on my way to England and reading a book about people's reaction to the movie. And I was scared. I had no idea. I was completely ignorant of the reaction that the UK had to that kiss. They weren't happy about it. And they weren't happy about that half-human thing. They've sort of made their peace with the kissing thing somehow. Although I do occasionally see some... I long for the days when the Doctor didn't kiss anyone. You know, and it's like, okay, well, I don't mind it. But I had no idea. I had no idea. But I became a little nervous when I was on my way over there and was reading how they felt about the kiss. But yeah, no, I think that barrier was broken and they've sort of gone all the way with it. And kissing's allowed now.
If it had developed into a series, do you think it was going to be like an emotional, romantic relationship?
I just don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know. They might have been, my guess is they probably would have been very careful about doing too much with that because we were already, they had an understanding probably, obviously more than I did, about the risk they were taking putting that in there. You know, Paul was quick to say, it's a chaste kiss, you know? So, because I had no idea. I'd kissed on film before. I was just a regular old, you know, whatever. But I had no idea. So my guess is they probably would have been very careful about going too far with that. But who knows? Could have happened.
Thank you.
Just real quickly, if any of you have not yet seen Doctor Who the movie, but are fans of the new series, go back and watch it because it is, no lie, a carbon copy blueprint for what they're doing today. This is where it all came from. And a lot of it is attributed to Grace.
Ah, hello. Thank you so much. I didn't write it, though. Yeah, I was just there.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Thank you.
During the production of the movie, did Sylvester McCoy or anyone else familiar with what had been done up to that point voice any apprehension on those canonical changes to the Doctor character?
I don't recall any of it. If there was a discussion, it was not within my earshot. There very, very well could have been a discussion with Paul and Philip Siegel and the writer and the director. There very easily could have been a conversation had by them. I know that they had to work on Paul for a couple years to get him to agree to do it. So they may have discussed it during that period. I know that Philip was very keen on having him have input into the script and his character. So it wouldn't surprise me if they talked about that. It ultimately was there, so obviously they'd come to some consensus if there had been a discussion. And but nobody voiced any kind of fear or trepidation to me. As a matter of fact, I had to go to England. I was in England for some reason. I think it was a convention. And I had to go in a store there. This was prior to the movie being released out here. So I went into a store there and bought my movie. And it had 6 hours at least of interviews, et cetera, on the making of the movie. And so then, it was a convention because then I got into a car and drove for about 6 hours. That's why I know how much they had. And sat on my computer on the drive watching all this footage of all these interviews with Philip Siegel and everybody about the movie. And I found out how much work, how many years it took for him to get the movie going, how many people had their fingers in the pot. It was amazing. And I was so glad I didn't know any of that when I was shooting the show. I'm not kidding. I don't know if I could have handled it. The pressure would have been too much. So I was kind of, in a weird way, lucky that I was as ignorant as I was. I think it might have been too much. I feel for Clara, the gal who's playing Clara right now. Because there's so much fervor right now on both sides of the pond here. That's got to be a little terrifying. She's a young girl. That's got to be a lot to take on when you're stepping into that spotlight. Her life will never be the same, and she's awfully young. So I'm sure she'll be fine, but it's to me, that's a lot.
And had the movie met whatever threshold of success the network had in mind for it, did your agent or anyone tell you what was to follow in the series, regular series?
I think they were looking to have it become a series, as it had been in the past. I know I was approached during the shoot by the writer, interestingly, who asked me if I'd be interested in carrying on the show if it got picked up. And I screamed, yes! It scared him to death. I think I hugged him, and he was British. He was very uptight. And I was like, yes! And I thought he was going to have a heart attack. But, yeah, no, I'd love it. I would have loved to have done it. Wouldn't that be fun? It would have been fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You mentioned that you started watching the show yourself now. I was curious as to what your favorite antagonist was, whether it's, like, you know, a monster or just, you know, a sentient person like the Master or something like that.
I'll tell you, it's not very hard for me to say this. The Weeping Angel still freaks me out. I mean, the whole concept, don't blink, like it's you that's going to end up making it go bad because you can't keep your eyes open and you can't keep your eyes open. Very scary. Oh, my God.
Follow-up question. Who would win in a staring contest between a weeping angel and a silence?
Time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hey, Scott.
Hi. This is a more of a general question to you as an actress. Having been a part of two major science fiction franchises, and establishing two characters that, because of the franchise they're in, will never die, do you ever stop to think about those characters continuing without you? Whenever someone reads a novel, they're thinking about you, the actress, playing that role. Do you ever stop to think about that? And if so, how do you feel about that?
I haven't. I know that Dr. Grace Holloway showed up in a comic book for a while. But I didn't know it when it was happening. I just didn't have a clue. So I found this out later. I've since had somebody who's a really great artist on Tumblr send me his own little comic rendering. And that was actually thrilling to see because he was taking it directly out of something I'd been doing on my website. So it was kind of cool. It was the first time I'd experienced that. So, and it was hilarious. So, and very creative. So, but... You know what? If it means that I can come to places like this and people are really cool and want to hear stories, and if I'm going to end up in a book somewhere saying I was the only American female to be in, you know what I mean? That's cool, right? And I had no idea. So, and I don't deserve it. There's nothing deserving about me at all. It's completely, purely accidental. But, yeah, I think that's pretty groovy. It's, if you can make a little mark in history, why not? That's really neat. Thank you for that.
Have you yourself thought of where Grace is now? Where is the character now?
You know, I try to, and I keep running up against this brick wall. I need a writer. I'm an actor, okay? Actually, I am a writer, too.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a second.
So. Yeah, now I've done it. I think about things emotionally. That's the kind of actor I am. I'm not really hugely into my head. So I'm not naturally a very intellectual type of person anyway. I think I'm just sort of an open wound. So, and it works for me as an actor. It's out there on my sleeve. So I think of emotional things when I think of where Grace might be right now. Because she lost her job, she lost her boyfriend, she lost her understanding of science and everything she trained for, everything she believed in. Her entire paradigm of existence was obliterated. So that's interesting to me as an actor. I love characters with flaws. So emotionally I think of things like where she would be and missing the doctor. You know, when is he going to come back? Is he going to come back? We all saw what happened with Amy Pond. So I think there's so many huge possibilities. So that's what I think of. Nothing really specific.
Before we go, because we're going to have to wrap it up real quick, let's talk a little bit about your book, because that's kind of the project that you've just kind of come off.
I have a second edition of a book called Dead Woman Laughing. And honestly, I have to attribute this to Paul McGann, because we were shooting in the cloister room, and I was dead. And I'm lying on the floor, and we're shooting, and it's the middle of the night, and it's getting towards the end of the shoot, everybody's fried, and I start to laugh, and I can't stop laughing, and they're, you know, the camera's rolling, everybody's tired, everybody's looking at you, and you're screwing everything up, and I can't stop laughing, probably because of Paul, it was probably his fault, he said something funny, and I'm like, done, I can't stop, so I said something like, you know, Dead Woman Laughing, and he said, that's the name of your book. And I never forgot that. So 15 years later, whatever it was, somebody asked if I was interested in writing a book. And I started to realize how many times in shows that I'd killed somebody, and I died, or what was the other thing? I killed somebody or I died. Or my own personal near-death experiences. So I thought this would be a funny kind of book. Black humor. I'm Irish. I can't help it. So, yeah, I wrote a book called Dead Woman Laughing, An Actor's Take from Both Sides of the Camera. And it's just basically a very strange kind of peek behind the curtain if you will, to the actor's life and how strange it is. And it is a weird one. You can, every actor that's been in the business for any amount of time can tell you a lot of strange stories. Hopefully most of them are funny.
Well, I want to say in this 50th anniversary... Oh, you got another... Two more questions? We have time? Okay, go ahead.
Hello again. We chatted earlier this morning. I'm your little great boy. His little comment about how the Doctor Who movie led to what we really have in Doctor Who now triggered kind of a thought in my mind, because those of us that were at the time, there was some unsettlingness about the fact that Americans were doing it.
About what?
Americans were making this.
Oh, yeah, that was part of the issue.
So I was in the States, and nobody knew what Dr. Food was. Then you went back home, and they were mad that the Americans were taking it over. But because of you, it's sort of a, kind of a thank you. Now, back here living in the States now, everybody knows what Dr. Food is. So now it has truly become, it's mostly a commonwealth thing. You had it in Australia, you had it in New Zealand. You had it in India, but not in America. And now, through the movie and then today, Doctor Who really is worldwide. You know, it's 50. And you were part of that.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
I feel like an ambassador. Thank you.
Okay, real quick.
You mentioned you had training in stage and musicals production before you went into acting. And my question was, because I'm a huge stage and musical fan myself, what was your favorite stage or musical to perform it, if you ever did, or favorite to listen to?
Okay, I have three quick ones to that. Are we holding anyone up? My favorite performance was probably Gypsy, because it had a really good book. I played Gypsy, and I had a fabulous mama. I had one of the best mamas around, every bit as good as Ethel Merman and Angela Lansbury, who I've also worked with, Angela Lansbury. Matter of fact, real quick, Dead Woman Laughing, I killed 3 times on Murder, She Wrote. You'd think they would have gotten a hint. I was always the murderer, every time. and I think I look like such a nice girl. I don't understand. Yes, and the other one that I love was Man of La Mancha. I'd never done it. I was never quite right for the woman role, but I love that part. I would love killed to it when I was younger to play that part. But it's one of my favorite stories. Alonso Quijan, Don Quixote de la Mancha, all the whole thing. To dream of an impossible dream, all right? I'm schmushy. I am totally that kind of a person. It makes me cry. I love it. It's brilliant. It's a great book. And it's beautiful music. And then outside of that, something I've seen only recently, but I knew the music before I had ever seen it, was a little Night Music, which is operatic, really. It's an opera, pretty much, and the music is incredible. Stephen Sondheim. I was writing about him just yesterday. I love him. So I hope that helps you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, Daphne, you are a talent. You're a joy, and we've really enjoyed having you up here today. And I want to say, in this 50th anniversary, you've been a real ambassador for Doctor Who to the fans, and we appreciate that. We appreciate your commitment to fandom, and thank you so much for coming. Ladies and gentlemen,
thank you.
That's Daphne Ashford.
Yeah. Aww. I love you guys. Thank you very much.
To Daphne Ashbrook, thank you so
Absolutely.
Much. First of all, for just being Daphne, because Daphne's cool. If you have not met Daphne and you're at a con that Daphne is at, go see Daphne. Mm-hmm. Go talk with Daphne. Go spend some time with her, because she's a phenomenal guest. And so many people were won over by her in
she's
the panel.
A great storyteller.
Oh, yes,
she's really phenomenal. Is. Great
she spins yarns very well.
Yeah. She's just so charismatic and so friendly.
But I know we wanted to pass on our thanks to her for tolerating us and just, you know, coming and hanging out. So that was great.
All right. And so what's on the schedule for next week, Keith?
For Friday Night Who, we will be doing The Waters of Mars, followed up by, and then for reviewing, we're doing The Rings of Akhetaten.
If you say it fast enough, it'll sound right.
If I say it faster, I say it the cooler it sounds.
The Rings of Akhetaten.
And Slam. The Cold War. So the next two new episodes of Who.
I see we'll yours next week.
We'll be reviewing.
Yeah, you get two newbies. Two new episodes next
week. Kind of
week.
Why we chose Waters of Mars.
It's Mars. And then, yeah, I probably should get the rest of the schedule posted.
That's your homework.
That's my homework for the week.
All right. Well, if that's going to do it for this week, until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.